God damn it! My life has value!
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore! I want you to get up right now. Sit up, go to your windows, open them, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
Listen, you fuckers, you screwheads. Here is a man who would not take it anymore. A man who stood up against the scum, the cunts, the dogs, the filth, the shit. Here is someone who stood up.
And good evening, everybody. Welcome to another edition of You Have Tread on Me Radio. We got a really interesting show for you tonight. We've got a former DHS agent who was a manager of several hundreds of TSA agents back when the DHS was part of the DOT. All kinds of alphabets coming at you, all kinds of little letters and alphabets coming at you tonight. We'll be talking with him. He's also a songwriter. That song you just heard, Oorah Up, was one of his creations. He's had several number one tracks on the indie charts and all that other good stuff. So we'll be talking to him about that. We'll be talking about the DHS tonight, TSA, his career with them, how it was before, how it was after he left. And we're going to be talking about this country and where we're going tonight, but we'll get that to that here in a few minutes. We've got a couple of new hosts coming on with us here shortly. We've got a couple of new hosts coming on with us here shortly. Sleepy Salsa, who's actually he's playing producer tonight for me. He's working the boards and everything tonight, getting a feel for him, making sure that he's all squared away. He'll be starting up on Saturdays from about 8 o'clock until 10-ish, 11 p.m.-ish at night Eastern time. And we got Voice of Truth, who's in the chat room as well. He'll be doing a broadcast, kind of like What's Going On in America for Dummies 101 type thing, with a Voice of Truth twist to it all. As everybody knows, man, I don't let anybody broadcast off my streams and my servers unless I'm comfortable with them. In fact, there's only been one other person before, and that was Fox. So talk to these guys a lot. Really good guys, and you guys have heard Sleep in the past, so you know that these should be really good, really good, really interesting broadcasts that are going to be coming up from these guys. Let's see, what else? Upcoming show for this Tuesday is going to be retired Colonel Joseph P. Martino again doing another episode of Resistance to Tyranny. Last week we talked about justification for resistance. This week we're going to take the next step and we're going to be looking at goals of the resistance. That'll be this Tuesday at 9 p.m. And next week, going to be really interesting. I believe it's on Tuesday. Not this coming Tuesday, but the following Tuesday, we're going to have several militia leaders on, as well as retired Colonel Joseph P. Martino. I keep calling him Joe because when I talk to him, it's just Joe. But retired Colonel Joseph P. Martino will be on with us as well. We're going to be holding a little round table discussing problems, ideas, solutions with Colonel Joseph P. Martino as our resident expert, if you will. Most of these people are going to be from Ohio, actually. We're going to have Ohio Frontiersman on, myself. I believe Colonel Cross is going to be on. And a couple of other individuals from Ohio. As well as Smiter from the Silent Sons of Washington. Had to throw him in there just because he's a damn good guy. So that'll be that. The website is getting fixed here shortly. Icono's still working on it. He's really completely revamping the website. So until then, archives, if you want the archives, hit me up, randymack@youhavetreadonme.com, and I will get you a copy of the archive, or I'm going to start posting them on a podcast site. Not sure which one. I'll probably just start posting the most recent ones on a podcast site, like tonight's show, last couple of week's shows, and I'll start posting those up until we are fully up and running. But apparently Icono is building a big, massive, a behemoth of a site for me with all kinds of bells and whistles in it. So I'll have the new look, same feel, and of course the You Have Tread on Me banner will, well, I'm not sure. Actually, he was talking about creating a new design, a new logo for that one as well. But we'll see where that one goes. And that's about it. So without further ado, I'd like to bring on Troy. Troy, you know what? I forgot to ask you. How do you pronounce your last name? Is it Wickel? Weichel?
It's Weichel.
It's Weichel?
Yeah, it's Weichel, Randy.
All right. So how are you doing tonight, Troy?
I'm doing okay considering.
I know. I was doing pretty good this week, and then I went out for a two-day FTX. Now I'm kind of feeling it a little bit. We spent the whole first day pretty much shooting. That was fun. Second day was a lot of drill and ceremony, marching and PT and things like that, and hand signals, troop for squad formation, squad movements and things like that. So I'm kind of tired today. I'm doing really good except for the government, but then again, you know, hey, what am I going to do about that?
Yeah, exactly. You know, that's one thing that has me in I'm not doing as good as I could be, is just watching some of the things the more the things that are coming down the pipe, you know, the more the things that are accelerating every day.
So, Troy, tell us a little bit about yourself. You know, you've got an interesting background here. Musician, former DHS agent, managing TSA. Why don't you talk to us a little bit about this? Tell us a little bit about yourself and your background.
Well, you know, I got involved in security when I was 19 years old, and that that gradually went into being a police commission officer with the LAPD in the Devon Star Division. I did that for a few years on the streets of LA in the Valley. Then I made a move back into private security for a little while, and after 9/11, they started recruiting for what was going to be DHS. And I ran over to sign up. So I was actually part of the initial rollout team, reporting to former Admiral David Stone, the Nimitz Group. Started with DOT. Actually, so did TSA. The TSA was actually created under the Department of Transportation. So I was one of the people that was in on the ground floor of bringing the 5,600 TSA agents in, the 56,000, sorry, TSA agents in across the country.
So let's talk about DHS before it became part of the DOJ, when it was still part of the Department of Transportation. What was its mandate? What was its job? What was its duty?
At that time, it was so chaotic. The main thing at that time was just to get all the private security out and get form federal agents in. And you know, and I can tell you something. When they first came in, the first group of people that was brought in, a lot of people don't know this, it was such an undertaking to bring that many people into an organization that hadn't even been created yet, that they had a lot of problems with their human resources. So not only were background checks not done quickly with that many agents, but on top of that, literally 80% of the staff at LA Airport, which was one of the biggest rollouts, didn't get paid for 3 months. So, you know, the TSA, when it first started, actually most of the people that were in it started off with good intentions. Even with not getting paid for 3 months, we didn't have one person resign. We didn't have one person quit. They were there because they wanted to protect the American people and they loved their country and their constitution. And somewhere along the lines, everybody that stood up for that ended up slowly getting eliminated.
Listen, I have a question for you real quick. You're coming in a little bit fuzzy on my end right now. Most people in the chat room say they can hear you pretty well. There was a question from the chat room. Did you just say ministers? Did you make a reference to ministers in the DHS or something?
No, I didn't.
Okay, somebody in the chat room asked if you did, and I didn't hear that myself, but I thought it might have been because you're coming in pretty muffled on my side. But like I said, most of the people in the chat room said they can hear you. But then again, according to April Rain, I'm coming in pretty crappy myself, so.
Why don't we go ahead and try and switch off on this? Call me right back. Because this is on the tablet, so maybe my connection.
Okay.
Call in, and we'll switch it over to the main laptop.
Okay, we'll give you a call right back. Okay.
All right.
All right, we're gonna try and clear the sound up here a little bit for everybody. We're gonna give him a call right back. They switched it over from a tablet that he was on over to their main laptop, so we'll see if we can't get a better connection that way. So, Sleepy, why don't you go ahead and take care of that, and we'll get that taken care of. In the meantime, if you guys have any questions, comments, or anything, you can post them in the chat room. I'm watching the chat room really well tonight, in case you guys have any questions. If I miss you, just cap locks it, I guess, and I'll see that. You can also come out and ask questions on Skype. That's the only way I can do it right now. I got a toll-free number coming in. I got a toll-free number, but I got to redo my entire repeater and my entire setup in order for me to be able to get calls in. I'm set up on a two-computer system network, and my second computer's in Washington, so we got to make some changes. So in the meantime, though, Skype is it for right now until we get everything rerouted and reworked and all kinds of other good stuff. So if you want to come in on Skype, you can come in. Randy Mac at U of Tredemy. Oh, I'm sorry. It's Randy underscore Mac. I'm used to saying my email address. Randy underscore Mac on Skype is my ID. Hello?
Hello, Randy. Is that better?
That is better.
All right. My bad. Right. I should have known better. Sorry, that's my fault, guys.
All right, we're sounding is All right, so it sounds like you're coming in a lot better there, Troy. So welcome back, Troy.
Thank you.
All right, so like I said, if anybody wants any questions, you can post them in the chat room. If I miss them, just cap locks them or something. And if you want to come in, hit us up on Skype, let me know. That's the only way I can bring you in right now. We'll bring you into the chat. You can ask. We'll bring you into the call. You can ask your questions from there. So, okay, so again, we have the DHS was originally set up to... Let's recap what you said a little bit ago, because I really couldn't hear you that well at all myself.
Okay. Yeah, their main purpose originally was to number one, take over airport security.
Okay.
Number two was to set up clear lines of communication between all agencies that were going to be a part of DHS in the future. So we were set to task with developing and implementing the TSA and federalizing and rolling that out. And which was no small feat. And then on top of that, we were to establish what later became fusion centers to get the agencies to have a clear line of communication, daily briefings, intel briefings, things like that.
Okay, so basically then, the job then at the time when you guys were under the Department of Transportation was airport security, correct?
Not just. We also had to start working on the Federal Air Marshal Program, which became part of TSA.
Okay.
As well as creating liaisons with the FBI, the NIS. I mean, just every agency there was that was going to be part of the entire group. So Customs, Border Patrol, Agriculture, everybody.
Okay, so that so far nothing, you know, nothing overly sinister and everything like that. We're looking at security. We're looking at the Air Marshal program. I don't have a problem with Air Marshals on planes. I mean, hey, you know, I think everybody on a plane should have a gun, honestly, as long as they're qualified to carry it, right? And again, you know, my idea of, you know, people's responsibility when they own a gun seems to be a bit more than everybody, than a lot of people out there, you know. I think you should be well trained in that weapon myself. If you're going to carry it, if you're going to use it, you should know how to use it. But okay, when did the Department of Homeland Security start to change from that original role then? Or how did they start to change, and why did they start to change from that original role?
You know, we had the Federal Security Director was former Nimitz Group Admiral David Stone, and David was an Annapolis graduate. He's an oath keeper. He had a strong reverence for the Constitution, and so he was very adamant that everybody in those roles with the TSA were following that Constitution and not violating people. They took and made him the Assistant Secretary of Homeland Security in D.C. And he actually spoke out against some of the stuff that was starting to happen with the agency, with searches being a little too close for contact, and when was removed as the secretary. The man that came in afterwards actually had more of a militant approach to the TSA.
Okay, we got a question from the chat room real quick. I was planning on getting into this anyways. I guess we can just kind of fast forward ahead, get this question out of the way, and then maybe touch on it again a little bit later in some more detail. But why not just air marshals instead of the body scanners? Wouldn't that be cheaper?
You would think so, but, you know, our government never does anything in a logical way.
Well, you know, we spent $1 million trying to figure out how to get a pen to write in zero gravity in space. The Russians used a pencil.
Yeah. You know, when we first did that, we also, instead of having a TSA Sorry. Yeah, we just covered that question, honey. Kelly's asking me to look at the question we just covered. We actually had at the Los Angeles airport, we had to bring in LAPD officers. So there was an LAPD officer sitting at every checkpoint. But the guys that they had us bringing in were guys that had already worked a 16-hour shift, could hardly keep their eyes open. So, I mean, you know, it didn't really do any good. The biggest thing with it is on the TSA side of it is, you know, and I'm here to say, me personally, the reason I left is I took an oath to the Constitution. I've taken it a couple times. And what we were doing was not in line with that oath. We were violating people's civil rights, period. And we were doing it for no reason, because you guys don't, everybody doesn't seem to understand, you're no safer having the TSA there. It's all smoke and mirrors. It's a matter of presence. And that was the biggest thing that they did, is they brought in a bunch of uniforms. They brought in presence. But it's not making anyone any safer. You're no safer than you were when you had private security officers at those checkpoints.
All right, I got another question for you. The fusion centers. Who runs the fusion centers? Are they run by the state or the Fed? Is it normally staffed by the state police, or are there feds in there, or what's going on there?
There are. It's run by the Fed, but there are representatives from local law enforcement. There are representatives from different local federal agencies. It's a joint. It's kind of like ICE is. It's a joint force of all agencies. And I can tell you that from the beginning, that that it was already well known in procedure that that the TSA itself was going to expand, not just be in the airports, but be at the docks and be at the train stations and be at the bus stations and be on the highways.
All right, real quick, I guess we're gonna get through some of these questions real quick. I mean, I was planning on elaborating on these, you know, throughout our interview and everything, but I got questions popping at me all over Skype and everywhere else. another question: are the states subordinate to the DHS in regards to staffing or the fusion centers?
Uh huh.
Okay, so the state police are subordinate there, and as far as, you know, there's a lot of controversy now over, you know, when you and I had discussed this, and that was one of the first things that we had discussed, you know, when we were talking, the powers of these TSA agents. Let's talk about their role, their power, who they are and what they are.
Okay.
You know, I know a lot of people think they're just security guards and so forth and so on. They have no actual police powers or anything. You disagree with that?
They do have an academy they go through. They're taught in IED detection. They're taught on how to use the machines. They have a short academy that they have to pass, or they don't get the job. They also, every one of them is sworn. I know there's a misconception going around that they're not sworn. Every one of them raises their hand and is given an oath of office, and swears to the Constitution. So I know a lot of people think they have a back door out. TSA agents don't have to follow the Constitution because they're not sworn to it, but they are in fact sworn to it and have to adhere to it. Not that they are.
Real quick, how long ago did you resign from the DHS?
2008.
2008, so not that long ago then.
Yeah.
So you were actually there during the whole inception of it, or the change of it from the Department of Transportation to the DOJ. And during the actual create, you know, during a lot of the changes that were going on then.
I came in October of 2002 is when I officially became part of the organization.
Okay, now, as far as TSA's role, what specifically is their role then? I mean, I know everybody thinks they're, you know, security guards and stuff. They pat you down, wand you, whatever it is. What is their actual mandate?
Well, that's actually what their mandate consists of. It consists of making sure that that planes fly safe, and that's really all they should be doing. is making sure that nothing gets on a plane that could hamper what happens on that plane. The problem with that is that they go way overboard, and the terminology they're given in the SOP is wide open to interpretation.
Well, it's like everything else, you know. It seems everything else that, you know, if it's in writing, it's open to interpretation by 10,000 different people, and that's what the attorneys are for, so they can, you know, bill hours and just obfuscate very simple concepts and make them very complex issues. So, was this really, I mean, were these security measures, in your opinion, I mean, were they necessary? I mean, was the threat there really?
You know, not really. You know, the threat was always there, and we dealt with that threat with private security that the airlines ran before. It wasn't necessary to bring in a bunch of people and swear them into a federal organization, and then have them lord that over people. And here's the real kicker: is they went about it so quickly, hiring so many that they didn't vet the people well. In addition to that, they brought in a good portion of the people that were already there working security. So all they did was change organizations that they worked for from a private firm to a federal organization. So it really didn't change much.
Okay. Well, you know,
Go ahead,
Randy. I was going to ask you a question. Now, you had mentioned the fact that, you know, when you first started off, it was less, like, I think the word you used was less militant, I believe it was, less of a militant organization.
Yes,
let's talk about
less
that.
Invasive.
Let's talk about that invasiveness. Let's talk about the more militarization of TSA or the DHS and things like that. What happened? What changed all this?
I mean, it was basically the person that took over running it in D.C. You know, the people that originally were there. If you remember when things first started getting federalized, your TSA agents had white shirts on with little. The supervisors had the little purple vest on over the top of it.
Yes,
and it had a real. It was a real soft approach. They were taking your scissors and they were taking your nail clippers, but you weren't getting gate raped the way you are now. You know, nobody was touching your genitals. They weren't trying to fill your wife's breast up when they were going through the checkpoint. There was actually a protocol in place that kept that from happening. We wanted the agency at that time wanted to be seen as being there to help, not as you're going to do what we say.
Now, I read somewhere, you know, I read a lot of things. A lot of stuff that the Patriots put out, you know, the so-called Patriots put out, the more you listen to me, you'll realize that a lot of these catchphrases and things like that, I really can't stand them. I mean, it's just so cliche. But, you know, I read a lot of the stuff that comes out, and I've never really looked into this one myself except on the most – actually, I never really even looked into it, to be honest with you. But I was told that during this change that was going on the government decided to bring in a former Stasi officer and a former KGB officer because they did not know how to implement or create an organization that would act like the old Stasi did in East Germany or the KGB in Russia. I forgot the individual's name. I believe it was two colonels or something that were brought in. I believe one was Wolf or something. Is there any validation to that aspect or to those statements?
You know, things may have been going on in D.C. All the SOP was put together by a task force of congressmen and senators in D.C. And there, it is possible that they had somebody come in and to help them create it. I can tell you that it was by the time it got down to the level of the upper management running things and then passed on to the TSA screeners as they were brought in, that SOP was worth a crap.
Too many chiefs, too many. You
exactly.
know, that's a problem. That's a problem. You know, when you start creating, when you start really start infringing upon people's rights and freedoms, really start getting invasive into their personal body and everything. I mean, you're going to have problems, and all these problems create new rules, new regulations that often have the opposite effect of what you were initially trying to do. They create more problems.
Exactly.
Often to the point where you become even worse than what than the situation or the problems that you were trying to fix before, or the concerns of the people who were raising these issues.
And with the TSA, it was destined for that to happen. They were taking people that weren't used to having any authority at all, and putting them into positions where they of service, where they had to be able to have a certain aspect of customer service, and they had to have a certain aspect of honor. And you did it. They did it so fast, and with so many people, that there was little organization to it. There was few people there to lead them. Half of the people that they brought in management aspects were from the airline industry. They had no police background. They had no military background. They truly didn't know what they were doing.
So. Well, how do they compensate for this? How did they get them to know what they were doing, or has that ever been done?
It's never been done.
So you basically have them private security guards or new people coming in who are given a great amount of authority, great amount of power.
You have people, Randy, a bunch of them that had never even been security guards. They had no training at all in that situation. They were you're talking airline ticket counter agents and airline station managers. In my position, there were 12 other people that were in the same position I was in. And maybe three of us had any background in law enforcement or military at all.
Okay, so they have no background in law enforcement or any kind of military experience whatsoever. Or private security work, a good chunk of them. They're recruited, they're brought in, they're given this huge amount of authority, a huge amount of power, and they're really given no training whatsoever.
Well, they're given a little bit, but they're not given anything close to what they would need. You know, if you ask me, okay, if they're going to be sworn, if they're going to be sitting here doing what they're doing, searching for IEDs, and dealing with the general public, then they should be going through at least a 6-week post certification class.
Well, you know, I used to work private security, and I used to do bodyguard work and high risk security. In fact, the friend of mine who owned the company, he was a former New Mexico State SWAT officer, lieutenant. He was a firearms instructor. He took a bullet on an entry. He got lodged in his back and his spine, so he couldn't perform his duties anymore. So he retired. He got out. He retired. And I was the only individual he brought in that did not have prior military or police experience. And
but
you know,
he
would not let anybody go out and do any post, any job until he felt very comfortable with their training.
Yeah. And that's how it should be. You know, so, you know, like I said, the training that they get right now, they teach them how to look for IEDs. They teach them how to run the ETD machines. They teach them how to run the CTX machines. They teach them how to look for things on the scanner. But you know, the thing is even with this training that they're getting, I used to watch. You know, I would be standing at the back of at the checkpoint. And I would watch. We would have people go through with dummy weapons, things, you know, dummy guns, knives, things like that. And 80% of the time, they wouldn't get caught. 80% of the time, they wouldn't be able to pick it out. So things like, you know, the underwear bomber. They just had somebody get a Tommy gun on a plane, didn't they, recently?
Yes. Well, it's amazing for all the searching that they do, for all this invasion that I see going on. You know, it seems that everybody just still gets on the planes with whatever they want. Yet the last time I flew was 6 years ago, and it was the last time I swore I would ever fly again until things had changed. I had two Zippos. They were both gifts from my father, who had passed away 10 years before. One of them he'd given to me just before he died.
Mm-hmm.
And they would not let me take them on. I told them what they were and how sentimental they were to me. They did not care. I then started to remove the insides of them, you know, the actual lighter part. They refused to let me take even the cases on board with me anymore at this point. They were going to take my Zippos, and that's all there was to it. I asked if I could get them back, if I could have them mailed to me. They said no. They are now ours. Now, they're now they're being confiscated, and there's no ifs, ands, or buts. That was the last time I flew. I refuse to fly anymore now because of that.
Yeah, I don't fly anymore because I used to work with them.
But now, my question, now I got a question for you from the chat room, which kind of leads to that. You know, I felt very, you know, I felt that these people had no right whatsoever to, one, confiscate my property unconstitutionally, two, what authority did they have to even search me? I mean, I did not, you know, there was no search warrant issued or anything like that. So the question from the chat room is, are they even constitutional? I mean, they take an oath to the Constitution, but are they even constitutional?
No, technically they're not. You know, as security, it's funny because as security officers, when they were private security officers, they actually did have that right because they were working for the airlines, and so the airlines could ban you admittance to their flight if there was something that they didn't want you to take on the plane. They couldn't take it from you. They could tell you that you're going to have to, you know, you're going to have to go back out and mail it to yourself and put it in your checked baggage or whatever. But they didn't have the right to confiscate it from you. And technically, with the TSA becoming sworn agents of the federal government, they're completely unconstitutional because they don't serve the airlines anymore. They serve the federal government. And they're not technically LEOs, but they enforce the Security Act. But the point is it is unconstitutional for them to confiscate your things. But how they get around it, what they say is how they get around it, is that you don't have to take those things with you onto the plane. You're more than welcome to turn around and go back out and not have your flight.
Well, you know, and you brought up a good point there. You know, when they were private, when TSA was private under the, and, you know, just employees of those airlines or the airport, whichever way it worked out.
Yeah, they actually worked directly for the airline.
They actually were constitutional because that airport is, you know, that airline is a business, mm-hmm. and they can refuse service to anybody. And if it's part of their terms and agreement that you engage, that you submit yourself to these checks and searches, you have the choice to say no.
Yep.
But now that they're not, I mean, if you get in the line and you say no, I'm not going to be searched, you don't have that choice anymore.
No. And that's the thing is the minute they became federal agents, they started violating the Constitution. They started taking your Fourth Amendment rights away because you don't have a choice whether to be searched or not. They are going to confiscate your property if they say that it's not going to go on the airplane. You know, one of the other things that they had me do as well when we were bringing in, one of the other things we had to set up was the lost and found in consumables department for the TSA at each airport. And just the one at LAX, the materials that they were confiscating grew so fast that they didn't know what to do with them. There were pallets and pallets and pallets of scissors and knives and lighters and toy guns. I mean, it was ridiculous.
I've got another question for you. So we've talked about this a little bit. We've touched upon it. So how did the TSA become, or why did they become such an invasive organization?
It was changes in the people that were running the organization. You know, Admiral Loy started it. I think he started as the first head of DAJ or DHS. And he was very constitutional. He was trying to make sure that what has happened didn't happen. When Admiral Stone stepped up, he was the same way. He was of the same mind. He was lifetime military and understood that the TSA's approach needed to be a soft approach, that it needed to be something that where the people didn't feel that they were being invaded, that they didn't feel like their rights were being crushed. And so he preached that straight down the chain. And the guy that took over after him didn't. He was of the mind that it needed to be a paramilitary police force in the way that they searched and how they treated people. You know, making a mother drink her child's breast milk, that's ridiculous. I mean, that's ridiculous. It's uncalled for. Stripping down a 90-year-old woman with cancer is ridiculous. Making an amputee remove his prosthetics is ridiculous. The problem is that they were so busy trying to make sure that they didn't profile that they put everybody into a profile.
Okay, now, you had mentioned that the Admiral, or what was his name? The original head of the...
Loy.
Loy? You had mentioned that he was very constitutional, didn't want people to feel as if they were being invaded, as if their freedoms were being violated. To make it as customer-friendly, if you will, as possible, correct?
Correct.
Now, when this changed, I mean, let's look at the basic concepts here. You know, the Fifth Amendment guarantees us the right to travel.
Yeah.
Our rights cannot be infringed in that area. The last time I actually cared to even look was, I don't know, five years ago, and there was well over 1 million people on the no-fly list. And this was a no-fly list created by the DHS, I believe, and TSA. And you were not allowed to fly anymore. Now that no-fly list is now being implemented amongst trains and buses as well.
You know, and the really sad part is number one, it was just a plain bad idea. But if you say there's okay, your name's Randy Mack.
The fifth is the right to remain silent, not to implicate yourself. But
not to implicate yourself.
I'm still worried for my 2 days in the field. So, but anyways, you know, one of the amendments in the Bill of Rights is the right to travel freely. So I'm sorry for interrupting you. I just kind of caught myself there.
Well, what I was saying is there are all kinds of people on the fly list that have no business on the no fly list anyway. There's constant mistakes made on it. Say your name's Randy Mack. Well, if they suspect you of a terrorist act, which, you know, we are all suspects of a terrorist act now, right? They put the name Randy Mack on there, then it's going to flag just about anybody with the name Randy Mack.
Right. Well, there was a senator's wife, I believe it was a senator, or maybe it was a representative. Their wife was named Catherine Stevens, nicknamed Cat, and Cat Stevens, the singer, he's on the no-fly list, so they would not let her get on a plane.
Yeah, like I said, it was part of how hastily it was put together. I'm not even, and again, that was part of the bureaucratic thing that came down from D.C. They said, we're going to create this, and this is how that's going to go.
Now, the person who took over, who was that took over from Admiral Loy?
You know, I'm trying to think of his name. Well, David Stone took over from Admiral Loy. Former Admiral of the Nimitz Group, David Stone. He took over from Admiral Loy.
Okay. All right, that was one of the questions in the chat room. Now, was he the individual who made the TSA and DHS into what it is today?
No. No. He actually followed Admiral Loy's model. He resigned from DHS after he had went and testified before Congress that more training was needed because the Constitution was being violated.
Okay.
And then shortly after that, he was resigned.
He was resigned.
Yeah.
Not one of those voluntary resignations, I take it.
Yeah, I guess so. I think he was resigned and reassigned.
Okay, I've got another question for you from the chat room real quick. Why does the TSA hold our own military coming back from war?
You know, I have no idea. When in the first couple of years, the first few years I was there, we didn't. As a matter of fact... We didn't even do checks on military when they came back in. They were taken to a separate gate and allowed to fly freely. Now I know they're doing ridiculous things, confiscating their nail clippers and multi-tools while they have M4s in their hand. You know, this is the biggest problem with it now, is it's lost any semblance of common sense. You know, if they were still operating the way they used to, in operating in a position like that, you have to operate with a level of common sense.
Correct.
You know, the 90-year-old woman, the 90-year-old lady is not there to take down the plane. You know that your soldiers that are returning from fighting for your freedom are not going to take down the plane. They're there to protect you. They're not there to take over a plane. And that's the biggest problem with the organization now, is there is no common sense used at all. Profiling's bad, but maybe it's not that bad. Maybe there has to be a level of profiling.
Well, I agree with that. I mean, if you've got an APB out for a 6-foot-tall bald Hispanic male with a goatee, you're not going to stop a 65-year-old, who's between the ages of 25 and 35. You're not going to stop a 65-year-old man with full head of gray hair, no goatee whatsoever. You're not going to do that.
Yeah.
You're going to go after the individual who fits that profile. You're going to pull over the people that you're going to pull over or stop the individuals that fit that profile.
Yeah, and they're not doing that. They're strip searching 6-year-old children. How many 6-year-old children do you think are going to be 6-year-old? I mean, literally a 6-year-old child. They're worried about them taking out a plane. We have to grab this child's genitals. I mean, if they did it, if anybody else did that to somebody's 6-year-old child, they would be doing 5 to 7 for being a pedophile.
Exactly. Another question for you from the chat room. So how does the TSA get changed to a better system from here, or can it be?
I don't believe it can.
Well, we've already gone over the fact that the TSA is unconstitutional now that it is a part of the government. Before, it was fully constitutional when it was private sector.
Yep.
I mean, by purchasing that ticket from an airline, you agreed
to that search.
You agreed to that search, and that's fully legal in private sector. You have a choice. You can fly that airlines or not fly. Now that it's government, though, it becomes unconstitutional. So, I mean, in my opinion, it can't ever become better unless it goes away, because its very actions are a violation of my constitutional freedoms.
The entire DHS needs to go away. Have you seen the list that the DHS has put out on what they now list as possible things to look out for a terror suspect?
Anybody who mentions the Constitution. People who mention the Bill of Rights. Right-wing conservative Christians.
Having a fervent regard for personal liberty. Being a Christian. Buying things with cash. You know what really gets me, Randy? Is nowhere on that list does it say being a radical Islamic extremist.
Nowhere. Well, again, here in the state of Ohio, if you have constitutionally lawful, if you have militia, which are mandated by the Constitution as well as all 50 states' constitutions, this is not voluntary. This is mandated service in them, depending on what each individual constitution says, as far as who's mandated to participate. You can't train. I mean, we're a threat to national security. But throughout the state of Ohio, you have Muslim training camps where they are training with fully automatic weapons and full military gear. I mean, they have full battle rattle on. They're doing drills, formations, everything. It's okay for them, but not for Americans that the Constitution's actually
who has the constitutional right to do so.
Exactly. So there's a lot of things here that need to go away and need to be changed. And, one of my concerns was when I read about I believe one of them was a Colonel Wolf or something like that from the East Stasi when they brought him in, because the U.S. had no idea how to set up a Gestapo or Stasi-type organization. And when I read that let me know exactly what the mandate was going to become for them. That was the new Gestapo, the new SS, if you will, if this was true.
Yep. And when I resigned I people, you know, everybody's telling me, you're crazy. I said, you don't understand what they're doing. They're going, oh, come on, you make six figures a year, you've got a high-ranking government job, you're set for life. And I said, I can't abide it. I can't stomach it. I can't sit and watch this happen.
Well, what were some of the things that you were seeing that really made you not be able to take this anymore? Because, again, you know, like you said, you got a six-figure-a-year job. You got all these people underneath you that answer
to
you.
It was literally watching them violate every constitutional right that they swore to uphold. You know, I watched it start turning into the Gestapo, into the SS. Watched these TSA supervisors at the checkpoint saying, you're going to do this because. I think the thing that finally got me is we had one of the monkey mucks from D.C., and there was a guy that came through, and the average Joe, you know, goes to work, pays his taxes, good American guy. And he had one of those credit card knives in his wallet. You know, the ones I'm talking about, it looks like a credit card knife, yes. Slides into it.
Yes.
It ended up alarming, and they pulled it out. Well, this monkey muck from D.C. walked over to the TSA law enforcement and told them, hook him up. And they pressed charges against this man for artfully concealed weapon. And he ended up going and getting convicted and doing 3 to 5 years in a federal penitentiary for artfully concealed weapon. It was an honest mistake. He forgot that it was in his wallet. And they were trying to make an example.
You know, there was a book that was written by an individual who spent 30 years in South Africa. And during that 30 years, he really hadn't come back to the States at all. When he did come back after 30 years, he wrote a book about the huge changes that he saw. He said, I don't even recognize my country anymore because we are not a land of the free. We are not the land of the free anymore. He said, just the loss of freedoms during the time that I've been gone are phenomenal. He says, I look at this country more along the lines of Russia during the Cold War period when communism reigned, East Germany, when the Stasi were gods, South Africa with all the dictatorships. That's what he really saw there. And, you know, they do it like retired Colonel Joseph P. Martino says, you know, they've taken our freedoms a salami slice at a time, so we really don't see the changes that are going on.
You know, when I joined DHS, it was out of a sense of honor and duty to my country. It was because I wanted to make sure that what I thought had happened on 9/11 at that time never happened again, that nobody was able to attack American citizens in that way again on American soil. And
noble
a lot
cause,
of people, a lot of
purpose.
Other people that, huh?
So that's a noble cause, a noble reason.
Mm-hmm. And that's basically why I left, because after spending the time that I spent there, I saw it transforming. I saw it turning into something that had nothing to do with Constitution, had nothing to do with protecting American citizens. Like you said, Randy, it was becoming worse than the threat that we had from any terrorist act. It was us committing the terrorist act.
Well, I agree with that.
I mean, think about it. When people go to fly, a lot of them are dreading it. They are dreading it because of the fear of what's going to happen to them. Is that not terrorism?
That is terrorism by the textbook dictionary definition. That is terrorism. But then again, you know, when the people fear the government, you have tyranny. When the government fears the people, you have freedom. We are so far from freedom, it's not even funny.
And you know, and the worst part is it's starting to spread. It's not, you know, it started, you know, and half of me thinks now that the asshats in Washington, when they originally came up with the idea for DHS and the TSA and bringing all of the law enforcement and agencies together, is they were beta. They used the TSA to beta test. They used the TSA to say, okay, what are the American people going to put up with? How much? because progressively over the years, they were allowed to do more and more things. They were allowed to confiscate more and more items, and it would get a little worse. Everything that would come down would get a little worse and a little worse and a little worse, and it was almost like you know how you want to boil a frog, you put him in cold water, and you turn the heat on,
exactly.
and he never notices that he boils, and that's how we've lost our freedoms, is they did it a little at a time, while they sidetracked us with reality TV shows and. You know what Snooki was doing, and literally, they said, "Here, watch this hand," and with the other hand, they slowly chipped away at our Bill of Rights and our freedoms, until now they've gotten to a point that they don't even care if you know anymore.
No, that's the problem, is that it's gotten to the point now where, let's go back to what you had mentioned a minute ago. You know, they basically do a test market on this stuff. To see how much of a tolerance we the people will have for it. For instance, the Patriot Act, you know, that wasn't a product of, you know, Bush Jr. there. Clinton tried coming out with the Patriot Act while he was president. But there was no tolerance for it.
And I'm sure Bush Sr. was talking about it beforehand.
Exactly.
And I'm sure he got the idea from his daddy Prescott, who bailed Hitler out of bankruptcy.
Well, exactly. I mean, you know, for instance, in 1933, before there was even the UN was already planned. You know, as soon as the League of Nations went down, the UN was already planned. But in 1933, it talked about there was a document that was produced that the UN acted on day one that it came into inception, and it was a memo about, or it was a plan for the deindustrialization of the U.S. Now, this was done in 1933. That didn't happen though until. Nixon, after Nixon was impeached, he was given the most important job in America at that point, to deindustrialize the U.S., give away all of our trades and manufacturing and dye technology to China, bring Chinese unskilled, you know, bring Chinese students here, teach them about engineering, architecture, and all these other things that would be needed to create them, to turn them into a manufacturing powerhouse, and then have them go back and become the new educators for a new generation of workers and management and all these other skilled trades that would need to be, that China would need to have in order to become that manufacturing power base.
Yeah, then they put Walmart together so everybody in the United States would buy products from China.
Exactly. Another question for you. Is there a plan to implement TSA to bus lines and arenas?
Yeah, that was actually in the SOP from the beginning.
So that was there in the very beginning. They
that
just
was
had
there in the very beginning. Not just bus lines and arenas, but train stations, seaports, docks. Not just with travelers, but with cargo. That's been in the works and talked about since day one. That's been talked about before there was a DHS, before the TSA was ever federalized. That was part of the plan.
Well, you know, again, you know, we talked about, you know, these plans that were long in existence before any of these organizations were about. It was just a matter of when the people would accept them, the Hegelian dialect. You know, you were mentioned they distracted us with reality TV and Super Bowls and all this other stuff. You know, but they also distracted us with fear, the Hegelian dialect.
Well,
you know,
you
give the people an external threat, you make them so afraid of this external threat that they're begging for a solution, save us, save us, save us, and then the government comes in, well, we have the solution to this problem, and all it's going to cost you is a little bit more of your freedom.
Yep. And you know, the thing is that there is no solution. You know, the thing is bad things happen in the world. And, you know, no matter what the origin of the attacks on 9/11 was, I'm absolutely positive that our government knew that something was going to happen. Whether they actually hired the terrorists if it was indeed terrorists that attacked, things happen, you know, things happen, and no amount of people grabbing your genitals, no amount of anybody is going to be able to stop all threats. And I would much rather, and I know most people out there feel the same way, I would much rather keep my Second Amendment right and look out for my own security than give up my liberty and have some government, someone that's hired by the government do it for me.
Oh, exactly. I mean, you know, we were never guaranteed safety and security in this country, but we were guaranteed the right to protect ourselves to the best of our abilities.
If I could elaborate on a statement that was just made on the chat, actually TSA, they do not have plans for TSA to monitor the FEMA camps. As a matter of fact, the Army has put out a hiring poster for that position. It's actually creepy the way they list it, but here's the kicker. It's open to foreigners as well.
Well, of course, it has to be.
Yeah. So they are also recruiting foreign nationals.
Well, I saw the National Guard doing hiring as well for prison security.
Mm-hmm.
You know, join the National Guard, or it was actually a private quasi-private, quasi-government organization, kind of like Blackwater. They were doing hiring for new prison camps that were going up, you know, new prisons or prison camps or whatever they want to call it. You know, I mean, there's a lot going on out there, but we just don't seem to, you know, we just keep watching that, you know, 66 megahertz flicker coming out of a little box.
Yep. You know, and we've all got to start reaching out, just start shaking these people awake. You know, they're in a chemically induced trance. And they really are. They're in a chemically induced trance, and that's why it's so hard to wake some of them up. You know, they've reported that IQs have fallen across the board in the United States.
Well, of course,
yeah. Not test scores, but IQs.
Yes.
And that right there in itself is proof that it's because of chemicals that are being introduced.
Well, what was it? Just in the last 15 years, they have relabeled the IQ levels. Now, I mean, the normal, I believe, used to be between 115 and 120, or maybe it was 110 and 115. Now we're down into the low 100s now as the norm. I mean, we've lost a good 15 points of IQ just in the last 10, 15 years.
And it's part of the process. They want everybody dumbed down. They don't want anybody to see it coming. They want good workers, and that's all they want. They want someone who's going to be their workhorse.
Well, you know, there's always going to be people that will do that. I mean, you know, let's look at Soros, for instance. Let's use Soros as an example. You know, during the reign of Hitler, there he, you know, when Hitler was rounding up the Jews and putting them in concentration camps, Soros was a Jew, but he was more than happy to become one of those turncoats who helped the Jews round up everybody. I mean, there's always going to be people out there that will side with tyranny for their own personal gain and benefit. I mean, that's just a given. There's always nasty, evil people out there. There's psychopaths on every street. I mean, there's a psychopath on every block. It's just a level of psychopathy that they're at.
You know, the good part to that is there's also the flip side of that coin. There are always going to be us that stand up, no matter what the threat. There's always going to be those that will pledge their fortune and their lives and their sacred honor.
Agreed. And, agreed. Know, and there's usually, you know, more of us than the psychopaths out there.
Yeah. And the problem is we just got to get everybody woke. You know, part of the thing for me was I have a history that goes back to before the beginning of the United States. I have three separate grandfathers in different lines of my family that all served in the Revolutionary War. And one of them actually served with the 12th Virginia Regiment with George Washington, and so when I saw what was going on, there was no way. I was raised a patriot, 100% through and through, and there was no way that I could stand and be part of that.
Well, it goes back to, you know, there's people that are willing to put up with this, as well. There's people that are willing to engage in this type of work, and then there's not. And, you know, and I agree with that point. You know, the vast majority of the people out there that are engaging in some kind of government work, whether it's the military, police, hell, DHS, IRS, whatever it is, you know, not all of them are these evil psychopaths that we see that are just trying to figure out the next latest and greatest way to infringe upon our freedom and enslave the people of the world. I think many of them are there because it's a job. You know, it's what, you know, accountants, for instance, you know, hey, I'm an accountant. Private practice is tough, and I'm going to go work for the IRS. It's a more secure job. Or you, for instance, you went to work for DHS because you felt it was a way to help secure, you know, help secure the safety and freedom of this country.
Yeah. You know, I have a buddy who's active duty, staff sergeant in at Fort Lewis right now. And he's done three tours. They're about to send him out for a fourth. And, we have conversations about this and about, you know, because everybody wants to know, what is our military going to do? Are they going to stand up and support their oath and the people of this country? Or are they going to support the dictators in Washington? And so him and I have this conversation a lot. And he has taken it upon himself to build quite a vast arsenal and ammo supply and food supply. Him and about 40 other soldiers in his unit have gotten together and made plans. And their mindset at this point is that they are there to get whatever training they can get and stockpile whatever they can stockpile, because every one of them plans on laying down their weapons for the U.S. Army if things go in a way that that would be against the Constitution, and immediately picking up arms for the Constitution and the people of the United States.
Well, hang on, we got a question here in the chat. So was this a slow process, i.e. started back in 1913, or was it something that got implemented in the Clinton and Bush era? Well, I think that the DHS, you know, that was implemented more recently, but anybody that goes back and reads anything from the League of Nations, George Bernard Shaw, the writings of Carol Quigley, you'll find that this, you know, all of these plans and ideas started around 1850 with Lord Rothschild and Lord Milner, who were given a mandate by the Crown to take over the world again.
Yep. And then don't forget later with Kissinger coming into it as well.
Kissinger was in there. I mean, well, you got Kissinger and Brzezinski. I mean, those are the two. You know, presidents come and go, senators come and go, congressmen come and go, but Kissinger and Brzezinski have been eternal.
Yeah.
And they were actually mentored by, you know, they were actually mentored by an individual who was brought in with, you know, a Nazi who was brought in on Project Paperclip. He was given a job at Yale, and he was handed Kissinger and Brzezinski to mentor as the new technocrats of the world, you know, as the new technocrats of the U.S., to be the man, you know, the power behind the throne, if you will.
Yeah, and you know, I'm sitting there, and you have so many people out there. Oh well, if we can just get Obama out, and I'm going, and I'm, you know, it doesn't matter if Obama's out, it doesn't matter if Romney's in, it doesn't matter. It's the hat that the government is wearing that day. And you know, and I hate calling them the government because we're the government, but the central establishment, it's the hat they're wearing that day. The president doesn't do anything but what he's told. He can't get anything done without support. So, you know, getting somebody out of office, everybody's concentrating their efforts on we need to get this person out or that person out, but it's not going to help. The entire our political system has cancer, and the only way to get past cancer is to eradicate it wherever it's found.
I agree with you.
You can't remove one tumor. You have to remove every piece of cancer you find in the body.
I agree.
So electing one person out or another in, you know, and it stems from the fact that we don't vote properly. It's not, you know, we vote along party lines. Oh, well, I'm going to vote for that person because they're a Republican, or I'm going to vote for that person because they're a Democrat. And it's a lower level of being awake. They understand there's a problem, but they don't understand that that's not what you need to do to fix it. And the only way it's going to get fixed is to remove the entire tyranny, all of it, and start over. That's why our founders told us that. They didn't say, hey, elect the bad people out and elect the good ones in. They said you have the right to abolish and reestablish any tyrannical government.
Exactly. Well, it's in the Declaration of Independence, which supersedes the Constitution.
Yep.
You know, we created the Constitution, or we created the Declaration of Independence, which stated all of the crimes against people's freedoms that we would not endure. And by stating those, by stating those things that we would not endure, we also stated what we would accept from government as well. And that truly is our founding document. And most people forget about that. You know, everybody chants Constitution, Constitution, Constitution. Well, you know, the Constitution is not set in stone. The Declaration of Independence says so. Our original government was the Committees of Safety and the Continental Congress.
Yeah.
And once we became more concrete as a country, we created the Articles of Confederation. That didn't work out so well. We brought the Constitution in. How well that's worked.
one of the reasons we've reestablished the Sons and Daughters of Liberty, the original intent is to pull people together to create as many committees of safety in as many counties as we can across the United States. I got to say that we are only 3 weeks old. We have over 800 members already. Liberty's popular. And we have a few states already set up with people willing to meet up to start doing the selection process of delegates for committees of safety. You know, and we need that. We need to get as many people on board as we can to get these committees of safety going, so we can do a redress of grievances and let these asshats that think that we work for them, that think that they're our masters, to let them know that we're awake and we're not going to stand for it anymore, to reestablish our authority.
I got a question for you, another question from the chat room, or actually from Skype. This kind of goes back to, is there a plan to implement TSA into the bus lines and arenas? You said that was on the books from the get-go.
Yes.
Do you think America will just sit and allow the government to continue on the course it's going with TSA?
Sadly,
and into more public, and into other realms of our public transportation?
You know, sadly, at this point, yes. We have way too many sheep out there right now that are drinking the government Kool-Aid and don't believe that while we have problems that they're small and they'll work themselves out through the election process. You know, not to change subjects, but on the Trayvon Martin thing.
Okay.
Okay. Most people right now believe that Zimmerman was probably in the wrong.
Okay.
He used excessive force. If you look at any post certification, the guy, even if Martin was punching him, he used excessive force.
He did not have the right to engage in. Right. AOJ was not met. He did not have the right to engage in deadly. AOJ was not met. Ability, yeah. Opportunity, and jeopardy of severe bodily harm or threat of death.
Exactly.
It was not met.
And black, white, purple, yellow, green, with pink polka dots. Most people across this nation agree with that and believe that he should. I mean, you don't see anybody out there protesting, you know, save Zimmerman. Nobody's out there going, no, you know, you guys are just going after him. Everybody says, okay, he needs to go and stand trial. He needs to be arrested, even if he's released on his own recognizance afterwards. He needs to go and stand trial, and a jury needs to decide. Besides
that's
that,
the job of the jury, isn't it? I mean, yep. that is the job of the jury, not you and I.
To determine
his guilt.
And my thing on it right now is, and maybe I have a little hindsight because I worked for the federal government, but the thing with Eric Holder being involved now, and the thing with Obama flying there, I mean, how many African American kids lost their lives under shady circumstances in the country this last month?
A whole bunch.
Yeah. How many did Obama go and appear in public and do a speech for? None. So here's my thing right now is I'm thinking that they're taking this horrible tragedy and using it as a way to be, number one, to divide Americans even more.
Okay.
And number two, are you of course you're familiar with the riots in LA during Rodney King.
I was there.
Yeah. Okay, so was I. I was there as well. I lived in Redondo Beach at the time.
I lived in Crenshaw.
So you know exactly what I'm talking about. Does this not feel, does this thing with Trayvon and all these rallies that are going on, does this not feel familiar to you, Randy?
Well, it does. And, you know, again, you know, a lot of this does. I mean, a lot of the things that we see today feel very familiar to me because I've been aware and awake ever since, you know, I was 12 and I've read The First Global Revolution by King, the founder of the Club of Rome. And I read his book, and it told me exactly what the plan for the future was. Dissolution of all country sovereignty, one world government, mandated upon everybody in the world. We would all become workers of the state. There would be, you know, predetermined populations for each individual country. Food would be controlled by a central government and distributed to the states based upon their population levels. And they told me how they were going to do it with this little thing that they made up called global warming. They even admitted that we made this up.
The thing that cracks me up with Obama's statement as of Trayvon, if he had a son, he would look like Trayvon. As I said, you know, I was thinking to myself, Obama, you're half white. If you had a son, he has just as much chance of looking like Ricky Schroeder as he does Trayvon.
Well, let me ask you a question now. Go ahead and finish up.
My point on what I think is going on there is number one, okay, if the state attorney in that state is already investigating this case, right?
Right.
There is no doubt at all whether Zimmerman shot Trayvon Martin. We know that for a fact, right? That's not in dispute. So Zimmerman, on that basis alone, because there's an investigation, should have been arrested. Which would knock down a bunch of the tension. That's what everybody's asking for, right? Why has that not been done? Because I believe that they're trying to raise tension. Imagine if they ended up, and you got the same agitators there, and I'm sorry to call them agitators, but they are. They're government schmucks. They're not out speaking on anything else. They can get some of their media hounds, Jesse Jackson and Reverend Al Sharpton. And they're the same people that pushed everybody to violence in L.A., during the L.A. riots after the Rodney King verdict.
Yes, they did.
And they are doing the same thing now. Every hour you look and there's something else popping up. Jesse Jackson quoted that blacks are being attacked. And Al Sharpton, well, what was his quote, honey? Do you remember? Do you want to see violence, America? That was his quote. So
you know,
this is
during the Rodney King riots, what I saw afterwards was interesting as well because, you know, we're on the subject of TSA and DHS. You know, I saw a complete lockdown of South Central. You know, I didn't live in South Central anymore at that time, but I had gone back to visit there. I had some old friends that I wanted to go see, and I went back there to visit. And, you know, I saw a complete lockdown of the city. I saw...
Oh yeah, there was National Guard.
You could not walk. You could not travel by foot without being stopped and pulled over if you fit a profile.
Yeah,
and everybody fits a profile.
Yeah, yeah, and not only that, you had National Guard armed with automatic weapons on every corner. You had tanks. You had checkpoints. You had curfews in place. It was martial law.
There was.
Yep. That's where my point's leading, Randy. So they right now they've nationally got rallies going on for this in most major cities, correct?
Yes.
So if they turn it to violence, it's going to become a national race riot. Well, can you imagine what Obama would respond to that, especially with all this new legislation he's got passed? It would be nothing for him to declare martial law. And then he's got to come and take your guns. Because this incident came from a gun, and he's got to keep everybody safe. So you know what he'll do for you, all you American people that aren't rioting. He's gonna go ahead and in the interim he's gonna go ahead and house you in the FEMA emergency residential camps. You know that's what they're calling them.
Yes, I read the latest update to the civilian military prison labor camp. The actual military handbook that came out, oh, when was that? 4 years ago, I think. 5 years ago was the update that I read.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it said who were the potential people were to be put in there. And it was every civilian, basically. I mean, every civilian. You know, whether, you know, for the smallest infraction of of a minor misdemeanor, jaywalking, could get you put in there. So, yeah, you know, these are things, you know. Well, we were discussing this the other day, you know, a few days ago. We were talking about martial law. And I had brought up the fact, you know, I know what people say, but I know what people say about martial law. It hasn't been declared yet, but I honestly believe that it has.
Yeah, I do
too. You know,
too.
We are ruled by a militarized police force. We are afraid of this militarized police force. This militarized police force can come in anytime they want without search warrant. Or without even giving you the opportunity to see the search warrant. They're called SWAT. Yeah. And we live in fear of this, and they rule our lives. At any time, we can become victimized by them, and it's always up to us to prove our innocence against their assumed guilt.
You know, anybody who doubts that they are militarizing our police force, all they have to do is watch the squads that came out to deal with the Occupy protesters. And watch how they dealt with them. And all you got to do is look at that to see how militarized our police forces come. You know, they were macing and batoning people because they were filming them with a camera, which they have the right to do.
Well, you're not allowed to video them, but they can video you. Mm-hmm. Closed circuit TV without you even being aware of it. I mean, come on.
You know,
what rights do you have? You're just, you know, as Plato called us, we're just the its.
Or as Kissinger said, we're the eaters.
Bertrand Russell, the worthless eaters.
Yep.
You know, George Bernard Shaw called us the worthless eaters.
And my question is when does the majority wake up and realize that they have no that the people that are doing this to us have no power? That all the power lies in us. We've watched other countries that were under oppression for years stand up and revolt, some of them with rakes and pitchforks in their hand. When do we realize that we need to stand up and take our power back? We need to take our government back.
Well, you know, I think that here's my thoughts on that. You know, I truly believe that the federal government is lost to us. It's been lost to us since the late 1800s. This is a proven fact. It comes from official documentation. The feds are lost to us. That is a whole planned regime there anyways. I truly believe that within our states, the major cities are lost to us. The major population bases of any city are lost to us. I truly believe that what we need to focus on within our states is on the local level.
Yep.
In a small town. I know I can affect change here. I know that if I get as little as 400 or 500 people together, that can make the big determining factor in who's sheriff, who's a city councilman.
Yeah, well, and the problem seems to be that every time we send a good one up, they're there for a minute and they get corrupted as well. You know, we've got a handful that have been able to stand the tide. That have been able to be what they said they were going to be. But, I mean, think about it. Most people, I mean, because we've been trained to believe it, most of our politicians, you consider politicians about as truthful as a lawyer, right?
Yeah. Most of them are lawyers.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we need to bring that 13th Amendment back.
Yeah, we do need that 13th Amendment back. I don't know why it ever went away. Why? Because they were all attorneys back then.
Yeah, well, you know, there's actually some speculation that 13th Amendment was ratified and then was disappeared.
Oh, it was.
Yep.
Because all those in power at the time would be gone.
You know, but most people honestly believe, rightfully so, that if a politician's lips are moving, he's lying. That people don't expect campaign promises to be upheld once the person's elected because they never are. Well, we have a handful that have done so.
Let me ask you a question. I kind of want to get into this area anyways. Yeah. What do you think and it came from the chat room anyway, so we might as well talk about it now since we're on the subject anyways. What do you think the tipping point is going to be then? We were talking about, you know, are people going to realize? Are they going to wake up? What do you think is going to be the tipping point?
Unfortunately, I don't think it's going to tip and people are going to wake up until the tanks are rolling in the streets. Until they're at your door trying to take your weapon, trying to grab your family, and take you to a FEMA camp. I don't think people are going to realize it. You know, with the new statements by DOJ against sovereign citizens and the new statements against against pretty much any patriot by DHS, we're all on the red list. We're all as far as they're concerned, radical terrorists. Our founders, they actually had a DHS briefing where they were telling the people in this briefing that the founding fathers were the first terrorists of the United States.
Yes, they were. I commented on that I've commented on that on a few shows.
You know, somehow
they were domestic insurgents, terrorists.
They've transitioned from still upholding or not upholding, but pretending to uphold the ideals of freedom. You know, nobody in our generation, Randy, has ever known true freedom. Nobody for years has known true freedom. It's an ideology. It's a concept. But the great thing about it is our republic is dead. But republics, national republics, countries don't die the way people die. And we can bring it back at any time. It's because it's based on an idea. It's based on an ideology. And all that's got to happen is the people have to stand up and bring it back.
Well, now you're kind of on the same philosophy that I am. You know, call it cynicism or whatever it is, but I've been around now. I mean, I joined my first militia at 17 in 87 because the Nevada State Constitution said I had to. So I went out and looked for one, and I found one, and I joined it. And, you know, every time I moved, I either found a militia to join or I started one up if there wasn't one around. I mean, hell, I helped start a ton of militia all throughout the years. I have gotten to the point where I'm of your opinion. You know, I share that opinion with you as well. I don't think it's going to happen. So my idea of what, you know, this is my idea. Tell me what your thoughts are, you know, if I'm off the wall or if I'm on base or, you know, if there's any inkling of reality to what I say as well. You know, what I believe is that on a local level, we have to start implementing ideas and an infrastructure now. You know, unlike the French Resistance was started on a moment's notice, I think that we need to start I think we need to take the Founding Fathers' blueprint and start working beforehand to implement an infrastructure, a civil authority, and the militia, because the vast majority of people aren't going to wake up until it's too late. But when they do wake up, they're going to have two choices. Comply with the government or option B, which we will be able to provide for them. And if we don't offer them an option B, well, then they're going to have no choice but to go with option A, which is comply with the government.
You know, I believe that we have to hope for the best and plan for the worst. I believe that we can do, you know, try to change things out on a local level, but I'm worried we don't have enough time. I'm worried that it's actually going to come to we are either going to have to fight or comply. You know, John F. Kennedy had a great quote about tyranny never being beaten by a vote. Mm-hmm. And our political system, top to bottom, from your local county commissioner to the president himself, I believe the corruption goes through the whole stream. Like I was saying, it's not. I don't even think it's just our federal system. I think even our local system, because most of them act as though they're subordinate to the federal system.
And let me ask you a question, real quick, from the chat room. What does your guest recommend that we all do in order to deal with this tyranny specifically?
Honestly, I think we have to get as much support from our local sheriffs as we can. Find the ones that are constitutional. I think everybody needs to prepare. Everybody needs to train. Everybody needs to be ready, as we're told to in the Second Amendment. I believe that every man in America that is a legal age to do so should own a rifle. I believe that the only way
own tyranny, a few of them, own a few of them,
yeah, own a few of them, and
give them to your neighbors.
Ammo, because when they first do it, they're not going to come for your guns right away because they know that's going to spark something off. They're going to try to limit your ammunition first. So while you can stock up on ammunition. Forget going out to dinner at the local Japanese steakhouse and spending $100. Put that money into ammunition. Put it into survival gear. Put it into food for your family. Use it to buy seed and grow a crop. Get ready. Get ready because it's coming. The things are coming faster and faster. The unconstitutional legislations that are being passed above board and in your face that are being blacked out on the media, they're coming faster and faster. They are taking more and more liberties every day. And the time is coming, and I think it's coming soon, where you're gonna, everybody in this country is going to have to make a choice. Are you going to go along with this new regime? Are you going to die on your feet or live on your knees? Are you going to make sure that what your founding fathers gave you, this gift that we are responsible for not being vigilant and keeping it safe? Are you going to fight for that? Are you going to fight to make sure that your kids have the same opportunities and liberties that you had?
I never had because, like you mentioned before, we've never known freedom, and nobody here has ever known freedom.
But at least we had ignorant bliss. At least we had ignorant bliss, Randy.
We lived in Plato's cave. We, like Plato said, you know, the easiest way to control the people is to give them the illusion of freedom.
Exactly. But now they don't even want to give you the illusion of freedom, and. It's coming to a head fast. You know, they're getting prepared. This new emergency prepared national defense emergency preparedness bill. It was made as a way to completely control everything on lockdown in case of a nuclear disaster. And Obama has turned it and tweaked it, or his handlers have turned it and tweaked it into a way for them to take control of everything. So if you do resist, they can starve you out. They can cut off your fuel supply. They can cut off every resource that you could possibly need to survive. The same thing we do with other countries if we go into them, like we did Operation Desert Shield. That's what Shield was all about. It was to cut off every possible resource we could to Iraq, so that when we went in, they were as weak as possible.
Well, you know, here's you know, we were talking about this before, and I was actually having this conversation this weekend at our FTX. And we had mentioned it earlier in regards to TSA when they were private. You know, our Constitution says we have the right to keep and bear arms. Now, if the government comes in and tries to say you no longer have any, there's no longer any guns, you cannot own any, you got to turn them in, that'll create a shitstorm. But what if somebody like, let's say, Soros comes in and starts buying up all the gun manufacturers in the U.S. and then decides, we are not going to sell to civilians anymore, only police and military. That is a private company. It's within their rights to decide who they do business with, correct?
Yep, then I guess there'll be a whole lot of new machine shop workers learning how to build guns.
Because right now Soros has been buying up all of the gun manufacturers in the U.S.
Now, hold on. I actually did debunk that one. The NRA released a statement, I think, a week ago or 2 weeks ago.
Did they? Okay.
Yeah, they released a statement that said that they actually do business with that company, that they are avid hunters and sportsmen, and that's not happening. So the NRA did debunk that. The commissioner of the NRA debunked that.
Well, that's good then. That's good then. Yeah. You know, it's kind of hard.
But it doesn't
anymore
mean
when you try to investigate what companies are buying up where. My expertise is in the business world. I mean, this is where I come from. And, you know, I tried finding it, but honestly, Soros, any mega billionaire out there, they run through 10,000 different holding companies, which own a million different companies, through paperwork, and you'll never know who's doing what. So, I mean, it's almost impossible to find out.
Yeah. Well, but one thing they could do is start buying up ammunition.
They can buy up ammo, and that's what we're already finding out.
You know, and it's funny that we're on that subject, because I haven't been able to find 223 ammunition in any Walmart in my area for the last 2 weeks. I was talking to the salesman. He says that the same group of guys keeps coming in every morning at between 8 and 8:30 when they stock it on the shelves and buying it out. So I'm going, that's kind of unusual. And then you have to look at the 450 million rounds of 40 caliber.
Yep, 450 rounds of 40 cal. 450 million rounds of 40 cal.
Yeah, the entire DHS and most of our government agencies, they carry 40 caliber weapons.
Mm-hmm.
450 million rounds is quite a lot of rounds. But also, you know, they get those weapons from Agent K. That's what their contract's at. And Agent K also makes the MP5, which is, yes, now available in 40 cal. So,
well, we got a comment in the chat room. NRA, who the hell believes them anymore? When I turned 18, I bought a lifetime membership to the NRA. Back in, I believe it was 2006, when the NRA backed several of the anti-disarmament bills that were coming out from the government, I cut up my lifetime membership NRA card and I sent it back to them. No letter or anything. I figured that was statement enough. I sent a copy of the bills. I sent the front page of the bill that they backed and sponsored and supported, and I sent that with my cut up membership card. So, you know, again, I kind of agree with that statement. Who the hell believes the NRA anymore?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, it's the infiltration has gotten so bad it's not even funny. It's.
And again, like you had mentioned, you know, if they just buy it, you know, again, they don't have to ban any guns at all. If there's no ammo, what do you have?
Yeah,
you got a glove or a paperweight. That's what you got.
Yep. You know, but I think one of the things, you know, part of some of the things I got to see while I was with DHS is, like I said, all the agencies came together, FBI, NSA, you know, and there was cross intelligence briefings, not just with DHS, but across DOJ, the Department of Defense. There was intelligence briefings that were done every day. There was intelligence reports that were sent to every agency, and they were briefed on operations. I saw they had us look over things on Operation Garden Plot, Operation Vigilant Guard that came later.
Right.
You know, they. Believe me when I tell you that martial law is going to come. That is the plan. It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. And when they decide it's time, they're going to implement it. Because basically, like we said, the republic is dead. The republic is gone. It's not here. You don't live in a constitutional republic. You live right now in a fascist dictatorship. You have the right to do whatever they tell you.
You have privileges. You no longer have rights or freedoms. You have privileges. You do not have the right to free speech. You have to ask for permission to engage in an unlawful act. That's what a permit is.
Yep.
You know, a permit is written permission from an authoritative body to engage in an act which would otherwise be illegal. Well, if I want to go protest, I have to get a permit. So I agree to the fact that I no longer have the right to free speech. Yep. And by applying for it, I'm agreeing that this right to protest is an illegal act. So
and
I'm coming to you for permission.
Yeah, and this is the problem, is we are capitulating. We when you sign, you know, when you sign your 1040 form, when you sign your draft card, it asks you if you're a U.S. citizen, and you're capitulating. They are able to do these things because we're standing there with our hands tied saying, yes, please, master, do what you'd like. We no longer research voting records on the... I mean, most people can't tell you who their local their district congressman is, or who's in their Senate, because all they did was vote party. They know nothing about their voting record or anything else, and because of that, the lunatics are running the asylum, and we all have to sit and take it.
Oh, of course, but again, you know. You know, it wasn't the government's job to behave. It was our job to make them behave, whether it's local, county, state, or federal. It was our job to keep them in line. It was our job to protect our own freedom. It was our job to protect our security of a free state. It wasn't the police's job. It wasn't the army's job. We were
the
army. We were the military of this country, the militia. It was our job.
And that's the problem, is that the majority of the people in the United States got too interested in watching television and going out on the lake on their boat and, worried about getting the bigger and better deal and beating the Joneses. And we became this consumeristic economy driven. All we wanted to do was make money and spend it and get more and more luxury and have to do less and less. I mean, there's a machine, there's a little robotic machine that'll stir your eggs for you now.
Talk about laziness to an extreme. I mean, but this is really what we've come down to, though. I mean, we honestly have gotten, well, it's like Brzezinski said in his book, Tragedy and Hope. Oh, I'm sorry, Between Two Ages. He said, there will come a point in the future where the average person will no longer be able to think for themselves, will no longer be able to know things on their own. They will require the advice and the know-how of experts, unknown experts, to tell them what to do, what to say, how to think, when to do things.
Mm-hmm.
We will lose all basic, he said we would even lose all ability to communicate on the most basic level with each other because of a new communication technology that will be coming out. Now remember, this book came out before the internet. I think it was 74, 76-ish. He says that will be global. It will be worldwide. And this communication system, this new communication technology, will isolate people even more. And it will break down interpersonal relationship skills to the point where people forget how to talk to each other face to face.
Exactly.
What do we have now?
And that's the biggest problem we're running into with waking people up and getting together and getting organized, is nobody wants to get out from behind their keyboard. They want to click like. They want to leave a comment on what was written. But they don't want to get out and make change. They don't understand that change can only happen if they get out in person and take action. Action brings about change. And you're not going to have any action on the internet.
No. And all we, you know, so many of us, we sit around on the computer anymore and we stare at, again, a 66 megahertz flicker on a screen that drops us into a beta state. I mean, why do you think England, after Hitler proved just how effective the TV was at propaganda and indoctrinating people, because it drops us into a beta state and we download propaganda and we believe it and we actually rush to it and make sure that we do nothing else but watch it. England made it a law after World War II. Every home must have a television. Now, TV was one of my areas of expertise because I was involved in digital advertising. I was one of the top ad execs in the country. I dealt with Hitachi, Nakamichi, Asex, Dainippon. I mean, a bunch of Japanese corporations. So I studied the TV, and it's amazing the patents that are out there for television signals. The government wrote not just television, but computer screens as well. It's all the same signal. You know, the government actually wrote the Department of Defense actually wrote a paper called The Killer Virus. And it wasn't some, virus, flu bug thing like that. It was a signal that the DOD had developed that piggybacks in on TV, on, internet and television signals through your computer and through the TV. And as you're watching TV, basically it ruptures all the capillaries in your brain and you die.
Wow.
This is what they do. So get off your computer. Turn the TV off and get off your computer. Go outside.
Go outside. Here's the thing. You can get 10 million people together on a social site, but you can't get 10 million people to sling a rifle in a non-threatening manner and march to the Capitol and say, hey, you guys are out. I think if that happened, I think that we would be able to abolish the current system and replace it and reestablish it just like it says to do in the Declaration. And I doubt there would ever be a shot fired.
Well, could you imagine the amount of work that could be done if all of these patriot bloggers and everybody actually just got offline for 2 days and were basically forced to get out of their house and go talk to each other on a local level? I mean, there's millions and millions and millions and millions and millions of all these so-called patriots, but none of them are talking to each other in person.
Yeah, they're not. I mean, they won't even mention it to the person behind them in line at the grocery store. They won't say, hey, what do you think about the state of, and that's all you got to do. What do you think about the state of our country? Get the person talking about the things that mean something to them and the problems that mean something to them, and slowly open their eyes to everything that's going on. Because if you do that, everybody's going to end up awake. I actually put a challenge out on the Facebook page for everybody on there to get out in the real world and wake up one person a day for 3 days. Get out there and talk to them, and find out if they know about NDAA. Find out if they know about the Expatriation Act. And if they don't, show them it. They're going to argue with you a little bit at first. They're going to fight with you. But you have the preponderance of evidence on your side. You can show them for a fact that it does exist and it does include them. You know, trying to convince somebody on a keyboard where they can't hear you, where all they're seeing are the words that you type, which are easily misconstrued, isn't going to do it. We have to actually start talking to one another again. That's how the Patriots did it. That's how our founders did it. They didn't send carrier pigeons from town to town. They sent a man on horseback.
Mm-hmm. Who rode hard.
Yep.
And said, "Hey, it's time."
Yeah, it's time now too. It's past time. We're running out of time. It's going to get to a point that if the people don't get it together and stand up to what is going on and restore our republic, that that they're going to have their boot heels so far down on our heads and pin us to the ground so hard that we're no longer going to have that opportunity.
I agree with you. I really do. If, you know, I have these kind of, this is what I've been talking about for 25 years, you know, and I'll be honest with you. When we had less access to communication on a global level, I had a lot easier time talking to people. People seemed to be more informed. People more willing to discuss things. People weren't afraid to actually tell you who they were and what they believed. I get online now and, you know, people are afraid to tell me their name.
Yep.
They're afraid to tell me where they are because, you know, we're scared. But you're online damning the government. You think you're hidden because you changed your name isn't on the internet. Everything about the internet that you're on, though, from your IP to where you live is already known. What are you afraid of?
Yeah, and I want to tell you hidden patriots out there something. They're coming for all of us. They're not singling anybody out. They're coming for everybody. They've already come for you. They've already taken your freedom. They have taken your life. They have made you their servant. They've made you their slave. And you know, look, if you don't know, read what our founders wrote. They wrote thousands of statements. And go through and read what they wrote. You're going to get a good sense of what they were thinking and what they were feeling at the time. And they warned us. Everything that's happening right now, including the Federal Reserve and the banking issues, they warned us.
We have to remember at the time, England already had a central bank. They already saw what was going on with the central banking system. They knew. This central bank thing is not a creation of the 20th century. This is old. This is ancient.
Yep.
You know, hell, the Hittites were doing this stuff back in the BC days.
And it didn't work then either.
No, it didn't work then. Well, yes, it did because they were able to enslave enslave a whole bunch of people for a while.
The population wanted to be slaves. but quit worrying about what they're going to do to you, because they're going to do it anyway. They've already taken everything that most of us considered worth living for. You know, they've taken your honor. Every time you go through a TSA checkpoint, they take your dignity.
They do.
And we're allowing it, and we can't allow it anymore. This is our nation. This isn't the 535 people on the Hill and a few over in the Senate. It's not their nation. It's not the 1% of the elite rich jerks that are meeting in the Bilderberg group. It's not their nation. This is the nation of the people, by the people, for the people. You know, and if the people are not willing to stand up and risk what they have to risk to save our country, to save everything that millions have spilled their blood for to make sure that you had, then we're in very sad shape.
I agree with you, and that's the problem that we have, is we have no sense of personal responsibility for our own safety, our own freedom, our own security. We believe so many Americans, maybe, you know, nobody in my chat room, obviously. I mean, you know, my list, you know, the average listener I have is well beyond the voting. We talked about the voting. You know, I say that the feds are lost to us, and I don't even worry about them anymore. I'm focusing on my local community, my county, my state, for one reason. You know, look at the Tea Party group. They got all happy, rah, rah, rah. We got 50 Tea Party congressmen who all swore to uphold and obey the Constitution. The first thing those 50 did was go and meet with a special interest group. The next thing they did was 40 of them voted to re-up the Patriot Act. What the hell happened?
Yeah, you know, and it's not just that. Like I said, even on the local level. I send letters off to my state senators about the NDAA and nullification, and we need to get on this, and they send letters back stating that no, we support the passing of that bill. Okay, so we're being sold out. We're being sold out all the way down. Everybody, the local courts, you have local family courts that are letting the DCS CPS services abduct people's children with no evidence.
I'm dealing with this right now. You know,
Kelly and I dealt with it. We have a special needs daughter, and she was born at 28 weeks gestation. She was 2 pounds, and as a result of a hospital acquired infection, we filed a lawsuit against the hospital. It gets into a big long story. Well, anyway, they accused because they'd actually did a surgery without consent. We went and met with the chief of staff of the hospital. Went up one side and down the other on her. She got nervous. We were going to not only file another lawsuit, but report her to the state board. And the next day, actually 12 hours later, they had their resident railroad doctor come in and write a report. Now, listen to this. My daughter had over 10,000 pages of medical file. She wrote a report and said that she studied the report for 3 hours and came to the determination that it was a distinct possibility that my wife was suffering from Munchausen by proxy, and was giving my daughter infections inside of the shunt inside of her head. They came to the house and took all 5 of our children. No criminal charges or anything were ever filed because there was no evidence. Never arrested, never charged, nothing. Never even questioned. And they took our children for 2 years. We had to fight through the court system. And the court system was corrupt. They violated our civil rights. They put a gag order on the case. They said that there was a local advocate group that stood up for people whose children had been taken illegally. We were not allowed to contact them. I mean, all this stuff that went on, and that was on a local level. But they were just as corrupt as all the people up in D.C. And this was a local county family court judge.
Yeah,
it goes
magistrate. Actually, you're usually magistrates when you're dealing with CPS. You don't even get a real judge. You get a magistrate who enforces agency regulation. The Constitution doesn't exist in that court. This is agency regulation only.
Yeah, this one was actually an elected juvenile court family court judge.
Lucky you.
Yeah, and I'll tell you. Our attorney used to say she was waiting for her to get on her broomstick and play out from behind the bench.
They're just as bad.
Yeah, they didn't like that we were vocal and knew the Constitution. They didn't like that at all. As a result, you know, it showed me how deep the corruption went. If you've got a 50-foot tall oak tree in your front yard, and it's got disease, and that disease goes all the way to the root, you have to remove the whole tree.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the problem we're facing with our entire political system. You know, the main problem is that these people, everything's filled with professional politicians, and there was not supposed to be anything such as a professional politician.
No.
It was supposed to be you and me. It was supposed to be average Joe going up to represent what the people in his community thought. And it's gotten so far from that it can't come back without it completely being uprooted and a new seed planted. And you got 50% of all senators that go broke into the house, they come out as millionaires.
Mm-hmm.
But term limits have to be set. PACT money has to be eliminated. They shouldn't be meeting any more than four times a year. You know, your First Amendment says Congress shall make no law, and I think it should have ended there. I think it should have been Congress shall make no law, period.
You know, Sleepy made a comment, you know, another major problem is that we are all geographically isolated and broke. You know, and no offense, Sleepy, but I have to disagree with you on that one. I've got people surrounding me. And, you know, here's something that I'd like your take on this. You know, I personally don't believe in these divide and conquer factions that they've implemented among the people. You know, Republican, Democrat, liberal, conservative. I don't buy that.
Yeah, two sides of the same coin.
Equalizer, exactly. Equalizer in EQ in the chat room here, Billy J. Burns. Him and I have had this discussion quite often. You know, it all comes down to one basic thing. It doesn't matter whether you're a liberal, a Democrat, an anarchist, you know, atheist. There's one thing that all binds us together. Every single one of us wants our home and our children and our family to be safe and free.
Yep. You know, it's the Republican, Democrat, left, right. It's the choice between cancer and terminal syphilis. It's
exactly.
You know.
But
it's,
you know,
okay, do you want to die this way or do you want to die this way?
I agree. You know, and they've openly told us that both sides. You know, they the powers that be have openly told us we're all pushing for the same agenda.
Yeah, they're all hanging out at the same bars afterwards. You know, after they're done for the day. The whole debate and conversation and argument that they have put in front of the C-SPAN cameras is there for effect. They're all buddies. They're all, with the exception of Ron Paul and a handful, Walter Jones and a couple of others, you know, who have been single-handedly trying to rail against the system. You know, Ron Paul is very often the only person that'll vote constitutionally on an amendment that's unconstitutional. But a handful, three or four or five of them, isn't going to do it.
No.
You know, you can still have a couple, like that analogy I just made on the tree. Yeah, well, you know, that diseased tree is still going to have a couple of good leaves on it. If it's a fruit tree, it's still going to have a couple of good pieces of fruit. But the whole tree's rotten.
It is. I agree. I mean, I agree with you. You know, that's why, you know, like I said, you know, I don't worry about the feds anymore. I'm not even worrying about them. You know, first off, you know, that's a bear I really don't feel like poking right now. I don't, you know, I personally don't feel that I'm prepared to poke that bear with a stick in my hand. I'm going to worry more about my local township, you know, my local township here of Oak Harbor. I live in a village, you know, village of Oak Harbor. I live here. This is where I'm going to worry about. My next concern is going to be my county. My next concern after that is the state. And I really don't care what the feds do. I'm going to focus on what I need to do here. And that's reach out, talk to my neighbors. I'm going to train. I'm going to be well prepared, well regulated. And if the time ever comes, whether it's man-made or natural disaster, I'll be there ready to, again, keep my community safe and to help out as I am needed to. That's the best that any of us can do.
Yep.
So, you know, again, I say, you know, everybody just needs to get the hell offline. This is my personal opinion. I think everybody needs to get the hell offline and actually get back out on the streets and go talk to your damn neighbors.
Yeah, and I agree with that, but I also think that the pockets of resistance that we have across the country, each small militia in each community, that they need to start coming together in a way to be organized. Because when they come rolling down our street, when they decide they're going to declare martial law and start controlling the populace, and the reason, you know, you have to look at the logical things that they must be thinking when they're passing these things and they're making these statements that they're making, and yes, the people do fear the government, but the government does still fear the people as well, and that's why they're putting these things out, because they're afraid that we are going to organize and 50 million Americans are going to march on D.C. with rifles in their hands, because that's not a force they can deal with. That's something they're going to lose to. That's something they're going to have to lay down to. They're going to have to submit, because there is no army, there is no law enforcement agency, there is nobody that is going to fire on 50 million armed people. Number one, it's suicide. Number two, the logistics of trying to take that many people into custody would be ridiculous. It would be impossible for them to defend against. And unfortunately, I think the only way to really restore our republic, we're going to be able to defend ourselves in our townships, in our communities, in our counties. But the only way to actually take our republic back is going to be to band together and make a march like that and say, no more. This is our country. This is our nation. We are the people. We are the ones that control, not you.
I agree with you there. We see all these protests and everything like that. Well, you know, okay, great. What are you doing? You know, you do these protests, but what are you actually doing? You're going out there, you're bitching, you're moaning, you're yelling, you go home, you pat yourself on the back. What are you doing to implement change, real change? Have you formed committees of safety? Are you a member of a militia? Are you guys actively going out and doing things afterwards? What are you doing? On top of that, you know, again, it comes down to, you know, you secure your county, you secure your town, you secure your state, your county, you secure your state. And, you know, all of a sudden we had 50 states that were saying no. Hell, even if we only had 25 states that were saying no, we're a hell of a lot better off than we are with 50 states saying, yes, we will obey.
Yeah. And that's the biggest problem is most of our states are not saying no. And because of the political system the way it is, we're never going to get it where the main leadership in our state says we're going to go against the government. It's very sad, but it's been so federalized that that most of these state leaders don't see themselves as sovereign or separate where they should, because we're supposed to be. It's part of, you know, it's our 10th Amendment. And I don't have faith that we're going to be able to get enough of the people seeing straight to where we could elect someone in. I don't even think we're going to be able to get candidates to run that will keep that oath and decide that, you know, and it's the same thing. A separation by a state, it's going to be the same thing as it was in 1864. The government's not going to want to give up the federal established government. The establishment government isn't going to want to give up any states. That's giving up income. That's giving up resources, and they're going to fight to keep them. And the bottom line is our government is tyrannical. It's a dictatorship. It's a fascist dictatorship. It is completely tyrannical, and tyranny only knows one language. And the only way to fight tyranny is with force of arms. I mean, it's sad to say, but we've actually let it get to that point.
No dictator's ever been voted out of office in the history of the world. So
yeah, they have to be removed. You know, and just like the things they try to, the propaganda that's out there. Okay, Hugo Chavez, he's supposed to be this horrible dictator. But tell me something. You know, number one, he was elected into office. Of course, they're saying that, you know, it was bot elections and things like that. But we, you know, the American government sponsored a coup to have him taken out of office. They got him. They put another president in place. They took him and kidnapped him and took him off. And millions of the poorest people in his country marched on the presidential palace.
Which country was this?
This is Venezuela.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, they marched on the presidential palace and made them return him. They marched on the presidential palace unarmed, but they did it in such numbers that they caused the army to switch back to being behind Chavez.
Well, you know, look at Czechoslovakia. You know, when the communist regime fell all throughout, I'm sorry, the socialist regime of Russia fell, those in power in Czechoslovakia did not want to give up their power. Everywhere else, except East Germany, everything was falling. Actually, even in East Germany, the Berlin Wall came down. There was a preacher, reverend, whatever, I forgot what his title was. But he started speaking out against these people in power. And the people in power decided that it would look bad if they did anything. So they sent the local people down there, you know, the local goon squad, to go and arrest him. But not arrest him. I'm sorry, they sent the church down there, his church. They sent the heads of his church to go down and move him to a new congregation, a congregation out in the middle of nowhere with a congregation of trees and birds, basically. Nobody else. The people got so upset that they started a protest. And there was only a handful that showed up at first, but they did not leave. They stood out there in the middle of wintertime. And people would go get food and hot drinks and bring them back to the people. And as it became, and they were protesting the church taking this individual away because they knew who was behind it and what it was about. Eventually, more and more people showed up, and they did not leave. There was always a massive group protesting. Eventually, the government came in. Shots were fired amongst the innocent people. As soon as these shots were fired, the vast majority of the military force withdrew. Those who had fired on those unarmed civilians were actually killed by their own military, you know, by their fellow brothers in arms. Water cannons were brought out on these people in the dead of winter. And these people stayed outside 24 hours a day for months. They were unarmed. I mean, we're talking Soviet bloc here. They were unarmed. There was no weapons that they had. And, they still fought back on, you know, the rare skirmishes here and there. They still fought back when it was necessary and needed. But, you know, those people just banding together through force of, you know, through strength of numbers. They were able to topple a communist regime in their own country that did not want to give up power.
And that's what it takes. It takes.
Can we do any less?
No. Yeah, we could do that and more. You know, we are a nation founded on violent revolution. We were the reason that we've grown the way we've grown and became as powerful as we were was because we were a country that wouldn't take no for an answer. We were a nation that would fight to the last man. For liberty, we've had our soldiers dying for 100 years over things that while they believed were for freedom and liberty, they weren't. But what I want to know is where has that spirit gone? What has happened to us?
We have been made consumers. Haven't you noticed that when they talk about us on the news or on TV or anything else, we are no longer people. We are no longer citizens. We are no longer men and women. We are consumers.
But isn't that fight still alive in everybody somewhere? You know, if people call themselves a patriot, that has certain connotations. It doesn't mean that you're going to talk bad about tyranny. That means that you're willing to give up your fortune, your life, and your sacred honor. You're willing to pledge that.
Is there really any honor left?
To make sure that liberty survives.
You know, I recently had a run-in with another so-called patriot online, and we were discussing a subject, and immediately we came down to, you know, calling me every name in the book but a white man, altering my post because he had godlike authority over this forum board, and he would actually change mine and another individual's posts that we were putting up. He would go in there and change them and alter them to make it appear as if we were saying something else, things like this. You know, I watch patriots all over the internet on a regular basis, and this is why I really don't get online anymore, because honestly, even amongst the patriot community, I see very little honor.
Yep.
And this is the sad thing. You know, I see so many people out there with their own agendas. I see so many people out there looking for rock star guru, patriot guru status for their own self-aggrandizement. I mean, where was our altruistic motivation for freedom?
You know, if people would model themselves more after George Washington, you know, George Washington, leader of the Continental Army, he got done with the war, and his first act after that war was turn that army back over to the Congress. But he didn't. He could have become a dictator.
Oh, he could have tried. Yeah, I guess
he could have said, I control the army. Who would stand before him? Who would stop
him? But those individual militias, I mean, we got to remember at the time, you know, those individual militias, they could have been called back because the only reason they were allowed to even go was because they got permission from their committees of safety or whoever, you know, the governors or whatever, and they went. You know, it's always been the militia's authority, ability to refused.
Yeah, he almost turned down the presidency.
He did. Yeah.
Because he didn't want to take it, and who was it? Was it Adams that was trying to make him king?
Yes.
And he refused. He said, I won't serve that way.
Was it Adams or was it Hamilton?
Might have been Hamilton.
Hamilton, because Hamilton was a big monarchist. He just didn't like that monarchy. He wanted the monarchy, but he wanted to be a part of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he wasn't a part of the other monarchy.
But our founders had that honor. And that's the thing, is us becoming consumers turned us into the me generation, and everybody's so concerned with themselves. And that's part of the problem, is everybody still feels kind of comfortable. You know, oh yeah, I'm losing some liberties, but you know, especially like the people that are sheeple. I don't own a gun anyway. I wouldn't care if they, you know, they did gun control and took guns. I don't own a gun. I'm not that concerned with free speech. I really don't feel like speaking out about anything. But you know, I've got my job and I've got my nice house and I got my SUV outside, and you know,
nice 96 inch flat screen TV.
Yeah, I've got my TV that I can dive into in my rec room, and you know, I've got all this stuff that I like, my boat and my jet skis, and so I really don't want to rock the boat. I kind of like what's going on. So somewhere along the line, we became so obsessed with what we can get for ourselves and how comfortable can we be, that we lost sight of things that are truly important, like what kind of situation are our grandchildren going to be in? What's going to happen to them? What's going to happen to their children?
You know, our duty was to secure the freedom of this country, each generation, not for ourselves,
yeah,
but for the generation coming after us, for the generation coming after us. And it was their duty to secure it for the next coming generation. We forgot to teach our children this. We allowed them to stop being taught this in schools.
Yep.
We allowed the school system and the teachers to become the full authority. You know, I've got schools now telling me what my, you know, what the boys can and cannot wear to school, what they can and cannot read, what they can and cannot say. You've got teachers telling the kids, if your parents leave the lights on, you come tell us, because they're bad.
If your parent owns a gun, please tell us.
You know, but again, you know, hey, what are we going to do about it? You know, we did a broadcast about homeschooling a little while ago, you know, homeschooling for dissidents.
Yeah,
you know, PE could very easily be marksmanship and, you know, fire building and, you know, intermediate shelter building, if you will. Hey. You know, whatever it is. All kinds of things could be considered PE.
Yeah, my children belong to the K-12 program.
Kelly was saying that.
Yeah, it's an awesome program. You know, they go to virtual school. So here's the thing. The state can't screw with us about having them homeschooled. Oh, that was one of the things, too, when they took the kids. They were all homeschooled because my daughter was in and out of the hospital all the time, had no immune system. So we kept them home and homeschooled them. They were registered in the county homeschool system. And they charged us also, or not charged us, but they also put on their parenting plan that we were guilty of educational neglect.
Well, of course. I mean, you're not teaching what they want to. You're not teaching about global warming and global citizenship and things crap like that.
The wonderful thing about the K-12 program is they actually are enrolled in a public school system. It's not in our county. It's another county. But they're enrolled in a public school system. They have a teacher that they have a class connects with online, virtually. The state even funds it. It's funny. But we decide the curriculum. They give us like guides on, okay, you know, you need to teach them about the Civil War, and then you teach them about the Civil War. So you know, my kids, when they came into this program, they were shocked to find out that we didn't win Vietnam. Apparently that's being taught in public school now.
Say it's not so.
I swear. They were shocked to find out that we didn't win Vietnam, and they were also shocked to find out that the Civil War was not fought over slavery.
No. Abraham Lincoln didn't like the black man?
Yeah. You know, it's amazing. And you know, I think about the indoctrination we got growing up in public school as well. And how many things that I've found now in my life doing research on my own. And that's one of the things too, is Americans need to start making themselves lifelong students. You know, you can never have too much information. You can never have too much knowledge. And if you want the answers, if you want the answers on what your government's doing to you, and you want the answers on the propaganda that they've told you, you want the truth, it's out there to find. All you have to do is look for it.
Yes, but please, please, by all means, everybody listening, don't read the latest conspiracy theory book by the latest conspiracy theory guru and Patriot guru. Try reading their actual documents for a change. Yeah, I preach this every day. You know, don't read something secondhand. You can read it firsthand.
And try to find at least a couple of documents that will support the same thing.
And, I mean, the UN openly states all of their plans and their agenda on their website. All you got to do is download it and read it. Hey, there you go. You want to know about population control? Go download all the publications that the UN offers from the Department of it's not population control anymore because we can't control the population, but it used to be the Department of Eugenics, but now it's the Department of Population Control. So, read everything you want to read. You don't have to get it from you don't have to get it secondhand from some guy who's trying to sell you a book. Shit, go read it yourself.
You know, when they started working on Operation Vigilant Guard, at first they tried to pretend that it didn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
No, we don't know what you're talking about. Then they got them on video, and they said, okay, yeah, well, that's Operation Vigilant Guard. We're bringing National Guard and DHS and stuff together to prepare for an emergency. And they said, okay, well, who are those guys over there in the blue helmets and foreign uniforms? Who are the guys in the UN uniforms over there? They're just observers. We brought them over in a joint thing so they could observe and learn how to do it, in the war zones they're in. Then they caught them on tape with these people in UN uniforms, actually training in house-to-house searches and seizures of firearms.
Yeah. Well, we saw this already with Katrina, didn't we?
Yeah.
We saw this with Katrina. I mean, they used the military/National Guard and a private company to come do it.
You know what really gets me about that is how come none of these people that were having their Second Amendment rights stripped from them took a stand on it?
Because you cannot stand up to the government. That we are taught to, you know, I hate to say it, but I'm going to say it, you know, unfortunately, you know, this Patriot movement, they chant all these slogans. You know, when Stalin said, we will corrupt and destroy and enslave the people with slogans and chants. Well, what are our chants? Support our troops. Well, those troops came and took guns. They defied your right to protect your family. We are taught to be basically badge bunnies.
Now, in all due consideration, though, there were several Oath Keepers that stood down.
There were, granted, but did they all?
No, they didn't, and so those people, as far as most people should be concerned, were traitors and committing treason.
Agree. Well, maybe not treason, but sedition against the people. Treason has to be in conjunction with a foreign power, with a foreign government. So,
yeah.
You know, but they definitely violated the rights. And I don't care whether your state has a castle doctrine or not. You are. Our country was founded on the fact that you are the king of your own castle. No matter how loud the government rails at your door, no matter how hard they huff and they puff, they cannot enter unless they are duly authorized to enter by a search warrant or an arrest warrant given to them by a citizen's grand jury.
Yep.
Not a judge.
You got to applaud Indiana a little bit, though. That resolution they passed. If a law enforcement officer comes through your door without a search warrant to be in your home, you have the right to use lethal force in Indiana now.
Mm-hmm.
I think that needs to be a blanket resolution.
We got castle doctrine up here in Ohio. I mean, I'm the king of my castle. You know, now if a cop comes to my place with a duly authorized search warrant or whatever, hey, come on in. You know, but again, don't try to come in, break into my home and try to, you know, engage in terrorism against my family with flashbangs and all this other stuff, man, because it's not going to be tolerated. You know, for instance, you know, Guerrero,
And that's what I'm saying, Randy, is you and I, I'm sorry, if they had come through my door forcibly without a warrant trying to collect my firearm, they would have gotten the ammo first. Yes, I probably lost my life at that, but I would have stood for something. And that's where we're losing it in the Patriot movement. There's a lot of lukewarm Patriots out there that they'll talk about it and they'll yell about it and they'll do all this stuff. But when push comes to shove, they're going to lay down and submit. And every one of our founders, every one of them was willing to lay their life on the altar of liberty. They were willing to lay their life down for the cause of freedom, and that's what it's going to take to get it back.
Well, you know, I've often said that there are two types. The difference between a patriot and a patriotic individual is that patriotic individual will chant all the right slogans, say all the right things, but when it's time to comply and time to submit, they will be the first to give up their weapons. A patriot will die with that firearm in his hand with a hot barrel.
Yep. Exactly. And that's what it's going to take. You know, it's our fault. If we had started maneuvering in politics 10 years ago and getting out all the ridiculous people and trying to get people in, if it had happened 10 years ago, then right now we would be in a much better position. But we're starting it in the 11th hour, and it's a process that takes time. To be able to reestablish from within, starting on a local level, to be able to reestablish what politicians are and who you have in office, it's a very difficult thing to do at the 11th hour while they're sighting in their rifles and preparing the prison camps.
I agree with you, but. You know, it comes down to it. You know, will people be willing to stand up for what is theirs? Not that which is given to them, but that which is theirs that cannot be taken. You know, again, government is created by man. Government exists only through our need of government and our consent of that government rule. At any time that government becomes detrimental to our freedom, our liberty, our lives, and our livelihood, we have the right to change, alter, and or abolish. Our founding document says that. Where's the problem? You know, where's the problem?
And the founders didn't say vote them out. They didn't say make a phone call. They didn't say write a letter. They said by force of arms that you have that right.
If necessary. You know, I mean,
yep.
You know,
and unfortunately,
Trench Cox was one of the second generation of the founding fathers. You know, he wasn't the Jefferson or the Adams. He came just a couple years after them. They were all still around, you know, but he was the most prolific as far as writings on the Second Amendment. And what they were about. It was not so we could go feed our family. It was not so we could engage in marksmanship for sport. It was for none of these things. It was for the security of our homes against any threat up to and including our own government.
Yep. Because it was necessary for the security of a free nation.
Free state?
Yep. You know, And I put up all the time, I tell people, you know, okay, where are all the patriots at? Where are all the real patriots at? Because our country used to be, you know, okay, it wasn't a big portion of the population that was involved in the revolution. It started as 3%, and I think by the end of it, it had support of roughly 40% of all the colonies.
About 33%. A third were for the monarchy, a third were... I don't care. I just want to work. The apathetic group, and a third said, "Damn it, I will be free."
and the thing is, if you listen to some of the people out there, they think that we've probably got maybe 30% of the people that are in some state of awake that understand what our government actually has become and who's pulling the strings and what their agenda is. We can't get, and it wouldn't take more than 10% to stand up and say enough.
Well, you know, here's the thing. You know, if we had stood up as a people, back in 1968 when they basically translated Hitler's Gun Control Act and gave us that as our new law here in the country. If we had just stepped outside and said no, we would not be here today. But we complied.
Yep.
If we had stepped up when they took us off the gold standard and held up the Constitution and said no, we would not be here. If they had done a lot of different things, if our forebearers before us, the generations before us had just said no, not take up arms or anything, but just say no vehemently and aggressive, and firmly, no. It's two letters, one syllable word. It's the first thing that we should be taught to say no. We wouldn't be here today. Maybe if we actually stood up, I am not for revolution. I am not for rebellion. I'm not for any of this. I'm for the security of my free state. I'm for the security of my county, my home, my town. This is what I'm about. I truly believe that the revolution already happened, and those in power are elected politicians who decided they were no longer going to be statesmen but become politicians. They rebelled and revolted against we the people.
Yep.
I truly believe it is our job now to restore that Constitution, to restore our constitutional lawful government as peacefully as they will allow us.
And unfortunately, I think with the passage of the National Defense Authorization Act and the provisions in it, and the passage of H.R. 347, where we now cannot even protest around anyone that has Secret Service protection or risk the or risk felony imprisonment. The soon passage of the Expatriation Act, and the innumerable other things that they have passed and are going to, they are limiting our ability to peacefully revolt. And I'm not a warmonger. I have personally had to shoot people in line of duty with LAPD. It's not a pleasant thing. Any type of warfare is not a pleasant thing.
No, God, no. I don't want
to
do it.
I have five small children, and I really don't want them to have to grow up in a situation like that. But I honestly, in my deepest part of my soul, do not believe that we are going to be allowed any other way. That we are going to have to choose between despotism and being the slaves of a fascist regime, or we're going to have to stand up and fight. And I honestly believe that there's not going to be another way. They're not going to give us another way. They're not going to allow it, because it's tyranny, and tyranny is defeated no other way.
I agree. Like I said, I want our government to obey. That's it. I want them to respect that Declaration of Independence, first and foremost. I want them to abide by the shackles that bind them and restrict their power, which is our Constitution, or any other government or any other form of government that we reestablish, whether it's Constitution 2.0 or, 2.5, whatever it is, I don't care. I want them to understand that that Bill of Rights was put there for a reason. These are the things that you can never touch.
Yep.
Whether it be the state level,
and that
or
was
the
told to them.
Federal level,
that was told to them. They were told these things you will not touch. they didn't listen to it, but that's what the founders told them. These things you will not touch ever.
We forgot to enforce it.
and that's exactly right.
We started believing that we had to ask permission to go protest.
Uh-huh, and that's because
to own a gun.
Yeah, they slowly indoctrinated us to think that we needed their permission.
They actually made us believe that the only reason we need guns is to go hunting. So what the hell do you need an assault rifle for?
Uh-huh.
All you should need is a small...
I can hunt a few things with my AR.
You know what, man? There's nothing out there that I can't... There's nothing I can't hunt with a Mini 14.
Yep.
There's nothing the ATI model, man, it's small. You can creep through brush with it. It's not big. And, man, I could take down an elk with it. I could take down a moose, a caribou, a reindeer, a deer. I could take down whatever the hell I want with it.
Yeah, you know.
I take down a duck.
Yeah, I have a few rifles and I tell people, these are for sport and hunting alone. I've got several ARs, AKs, And that's why we, that's what we tell people. Oh, these are for sport and hunting. You know, but the Constitution, and like I said, think back in the day, in the late 1700s, it was actually required for any adult male to own a rifle, wasn't it? I mean, it was considered to be required. Nowadays, they are gonna give you a holy hell if they catch you with anything. It's ridiculous how out of control and authoritarian our servants have become.
You know, there's been comments, and I hear this all the time, and actually, you know, it's funny. You know, somehow I've become one of the most hated men in the Patriot community amongst those Patriot gurus and the other Patriot celebrities out there. Somehow I've become the most hated man out there. Maybe it's because I understand the Constitution and I call them on their BS. You know, but I've often said that, and it's funny because everybody imitates me and they mimic me and they, you know, and they take the things that I say and they take credit for it. But, you know, I always said, I was asked one time, I was 6 years ago on a broadcast, one of my first broadcasts when I got online because I was living in Canada, and I really couldn't get on the streets anymore because I was in Canada. It's none of my business what goes on in Canada. It's your country. You handle it. I'll work on my country. So I got a radio broadcast, and somebody asked me, you know, where are our leaders at? And I said, you want to know where your leader is? You walk in the bathroom, you look in that mirror, and that person looking right back at you, that's the leader.
Yep.
We got comments in here again, you know, where are our leaders? I state this to you. You go in that bathroom, you look in the mirror.
They're not doing their job.
And you look in that mirror and you ask, where's my leader at? And that person you're staring at in that mirror is the leader. You become that leader. Don't wait for this shining, don't wait for these damn knights in shining armor to rise up. Yeah, it's not going
to
happen.
Nobody's coming to save us. Nobody's coming to save us, everybody. Nobody's coming to save us. I'm telling you right now, we are going to have to save ourselves. We like Randy just said, we are the leaders. It's us. And we're not doing our job. We're too busy, you know, watching American Idol and clicking like on Facebook, playing Farmville and, you know, Mafia Wars. We have to start coming to the understanding that no agency, no politician, has authority over you if you are not violating a law, a correct and legal law. And I'm not talking about some of this unconstitutional stuff they've been passing, because as far as I'm concerned, that's of no force. The Constitution.
There was no law. You know, there was no crime if you did not create a victim.
Yeah, exactly.
So unless you created a victim by damage to property or personal well-being, or their reputation, because slander and libel slander was mentioned in the Constitution, because you know what? You damage somebody's good reputation and you destroyed them. So slander was mentioned. But other than that, you know, if there was no victim, there was no crime. But somehow the state has now become a victim. This little piece of paper, you know, this little thing, these few people have become the victims. And honestly, you mentioned it earlier. You know, who the hell are these people? I don't care whether it's your sheriff. I don't care whether it's your city council. I don't care whether it's your mayor, the cop down the road. These people are no different than you. They have no more authority than you. They have no more power than you. In fact, they have less because they serve you.
Yep.
You are the master of this house. Your servants have taken over. These people put on their pants one leg at a time. If they don't eat, they die. If they don't sleep, they go crazy. If they don't drink water, they die. No different than you. So when the hell did they think that they could tell you how you can live, what you can do, where you can go, what you can say, how you will raise your children, and what, where, when, why of how anything that you can think of to do at all?
Yep.
They have no more authority than you. In fact, you have so much more authority than them. If you would just take it and grab it and remind them forcefully, if need be, with.
And not only that, your authority comes from the ultimate law in the land. Your authority comes from the United States Constitution. It comes from even higher than that. It comes from the Declaration of Independence.
Thank you very much.
And your authority supersedes any authority they have. Any local law or anything like that that's been written, your authority supersedes that. They only have the authority that you give them, because they get their authority from the governed. And that would have worked just fine if the federal government would have stayed out of other matters. They weren't there to give the people their rights. They were there to protect the rights they had.
You know, it's funny. There's a quote from 11 Kev in the chat room, and it's funny because my captain over here, his name is Captain Parker. but it says, stand your ground, don't fire unless fired upon, but if they mean to have war, let it begin here. I agree with that, you know. Go out there, you know your community. Be there for the safety and the well-being of your community. You know, so many of these militia groups out there, and this is something I got to say. So many of these militia groups out there, they're forming for shit hits the fan. They're forming for defense against our government, this and that, you know. First and foremost, our militia were there for the security of a free state. It was not to engage in insurrection or rebellion. Yep. It was to secure our free state. And I believe that the problem with so many of these militia out there is that they form up with this very small tunnel vision, short-term goal in mind. They have no long-term vision of what the militia is and what it should be. Well, this is why they all fail.
And they're not thinking about the necessity of having committees of safety in place, because okay, yeah, 30 million of us, we grab guns and we head to Washington, and we
under whose authority
and when we go in and abolish the system, who's going to run the country? Who's going to be the interim government while a new government's being legally elected on paper? Without a voting machine and a tablet, you know, who's gonna, and that's what they're not thinking of. All they're thinking of is we're gonna march down there and give them hell.
You know, honestly, unless another state calls for the aid of the militia of another state, if your militia leaves your state and goes into another state, you are considered an invading army. Yep. So how do you even get to Washington? Under whose authority are you going to muster?
Well, you know, you got to consider though that the English did consider the militia in the States an outlaw band of rebels,
of course,
invading their colonies.
Well, because we got rid of the loyalists in the militia, and we reformed new militia.
Yep.
We got rid of the loyalists. We got rid of the Tories.
You know, but at some point, we're gonna have to gather together just like what happened in Lexington, where the militia didn't fire. Well, we're not sure if the militia fired first or not. We assume that they didn't. But it's a matter for a great debate. But
well, there's documents saying that they did fire first. The other documents saying they didn't fire first. But in the end, does it really matter?
Yeah, but their intent was to stand their ground. And to say no more, and we're here, and we're going to protect our what is to be our nation. We're going to protect our colonies. We're going to protect our homes and our families, and our livelihood. And that sparked it all off. And we're going to need a statement like that, to a shot across their bow to say, we're not taking it anymore. You go ahead and pass whatever you want. The people of this nation are not going to consider it. We're going to consider it of no force.
You are a
rogue, tyrannical government that does not represent us. You do not represent the people of this country. You do not represent what America stands for. And eventually we're going to have to take a stand. Otherwise, we're just going to sit here and keep letting them do what they're doing.
You know, Plato had said the best way to enslave a people is to give them the illusion of freedom. And part of that illusion, he said, to keep the people from constantly rising up and rebelling every time we make life difficult on the ids, was to give them the vote. This way, it gives them a sense of the future. Well, we didn't get them this time, but we'll get them next time, guys. Yeah. This is a rigged game back from Plato's days, 2,300 years ago. And he said, I am not the author of these ideas. All of these techniques of control have been mastered for centuries before me. For millennia, he said, for millennia before me. All of these controls, c- control technique, all of these techniques have been used for, have been perfected millennia before me.
You know, I am, we have had a lot of Ron Paulers join our page, and I love Ron Paul. I'll tell you what, if we are ever successful in restoring a public republic, he would be the first man I would offer the presidency to. Because he's honest and he understands who he works for. But you got everybody that's out there and they're thinking, okay, well, Ron Paul's going to get the delegates. He's going to get in. Well, number one, if you've watched the widespread voter corruption that's going on in the caucuses and the primaries, they're going to do everything they can illegally or however they have to do it to make sure that he does not get the nomination. If we get to an election, I'm going to vote him in. If I'm capable of it, I will write him in. I'll do it. I'm steadfast. I will not vote for Romney. I will not vote for Santorum. I will not vote for Gingrich. I definitely will not vote for Obama. But I honestly don't think they are going to let it happen under no circumstances, because it will throw the entire system upside down. And even if we manage to get him in, what changes can he make by himself? He's going to run into the same walls in the presidency that he runs into in Congress. But that being said, everybody's, make sure you cast your vote for Ron Paul. When the presidential election, he's nominated, make sure you cast your vote for him. If you're not a delegate, your vote doesn't matter. It's the same as sitting on daddy's lap, turning the steering wheel, pretending to drive the car. Your vote does not count unless you're a delegate. We do not vote the president into office. The Electoral College votes the president into office. A president can win the popular vote and lose the election.
JFK did.
Yeah. So I'll vote for Ron Paul because it'll help me sleep at night knowing that I voted for somebody that was actually for the Constitution. But I know that my vote doesn't count as far as getting him in office.
No, it doesn't.
Honestly, we've
put so much thing into this presidency. Let us remember, the president was only the head foreign ambassador to all the other countries of the world and the commander in chief. That was it. All power laid with Congress.
Yeah, but don't tell Obama that.
Those were our leaders. Those were our leaders. Those were the elected leaders of this country.
And it's because it was supposed to be the people.
And we weren't even supposed to vote for the president. You know, there was never even a vote for the presidency until recently. You didn't vote for the president back when Washington was there.
But you have so many people in this country that are, even ones that are awake and understand what's going on. Even ones that see the big picture writing on the wall, and they think that it'll all be okay if they can just get Ron Paul elected, and out getting people to cast their vote for him in the election, if like I said, or write him in the election if he's not nominated. And the bottom line is they don't care about your write-ins, they don't care about your vote. It's an exercise in making you feel like you're involved. It's pulling a lever. That's all it is. That lever pull means nothing. So it blows me away that all these people that understand some of the dire circumstances in our country. And while yes, if we could get every politician to have the mindset of Ron Paul, we could change things without ever having any type of revolution. But that's not going to happen unless we get all of the cancer out first.
I agree. Well, listen, Troy, I have really enjoyed having you on here. We're already 43 minutes past my normal time that I normally close out, but I've had such a great conversation with you. I'm really glad that I did meet you. I'm glad that I did invite you on because, it's really rare to find somebody, you know, even as selective as I am with my guests that I do bring on. And let me tell you, for every 10 people I talk to that I think might be a good guest, one makes it on. I I'm very selective on who I bring on, because I don't bring on conspiracy theorists. I don't bring on people who preach doom and gloom. I bring on people with solutions. I bring on people that actually understand the Constitution, that understand where we are, that understand what needs to be done, that can talk intelligently about these things, that are not out there screaming, grab your AKs, let's go, yeah, but understand that if that is the only resolution left to us, then that is what we must do. You know, so I'm really glad that I did get to meet you and Kelly. I'm looking forward to our continuing relationship. You know, we're going to be going over to Truth and Freedom Network is going to be syndicating, you know, I guess syndicating is a proper word. They're going to be syndicating the You Have Tread on Me broadcast, Mind Sleepies and the Voice of Truth, and I'm looking forward to that. You know, I think I'm going to be in good company there with, you know, just from what I've seen from the people that I already know of over there, I think I'm going to be in good company. So I really want to thank you for coming on.
Thank you for having me, Randy. And we're also, you know, I know Kelly's mentioned to you the interview that's going to be going on tomorrow.
Monday, yes. We're gonna have on Bad. How do you pronounce it? Badnarek?
Badnarek. You know, people across he goes across the country and teaches this 8-hour constitutional course.
Right.
It is so informative on the Constitution for people that don't have a good grasp of the Constitution and what is actually going on and what your rights are and what your rights aren't. And the fact that you're a citizen of your state, for people that don't understand this, he explains it. He breaks it down for you and gives you a good understanding. And there's going to be more coming from him later that everybody's going to love. Everybody's going to have the opportunity, if they want it, to really have a good understanding of the Constitution.
What's his first name? Was it Steve?
Michael.
Michael Badnarek. That's right.
Michael Badnarek. He's an constitutional expert. He actually ran for the presidency in 2004.
Yes, he did.
And he tours all around the United States, and we got the privilege and the honor. He's actually calling in from the airport tomorrow night, believe it or not. He's on his way to Texas. So we can actually talk to him about his experience with DHS and TSA as he went through the checkpoint.
Tell us, did they grow up on you?
Yeah, I know, right?
Did you feel violated?
He's going to speak with us tomorrow. We probably get him for about an hour, I think, an hour of his time for everybody to call in and talk to him, ask him his questions. I, for one, have lots of questions for him that I'm hoping to seek answers for. But Truth Finders Network is actually in the works with him right now on an 8-week, possibly. I'm not sure if it's going to be a full day or if it's going to be split up over 8 weeks, where online, if you YouTube him, just put Michael Badnarek in, you'll find a 43-part series and an 8-hour course that he does all across the United States. He's going to do that live on Truth Finders Network.
Nice.
So we'll be able...
I'll be there.
We'll do like an hour of a video and then an hour of question and answer, where you guys can actually call in and ask your questions and ask him the tough questions. You want to know how to implement the Committee of the Safety. You want to know when. You want to know how to do this. When do we stop talking? What do we need to do? This is the man that's going to tell you how to implement it and how to act. Not just put words on paper or not how to just do something, but to actually get out there and get it done. So that's, I am like, I know, Rose, calm down. But
and where can they
I am
find
just, that? I'm like a kid waiting to go to Disneyland. I am such a huge fan of his and his work, and he's got so much knowledge and so much that if you're not there, shame on you. That's all I got to say. I mean, it's not like the chance that you get every day to actually speak to somebody with his caliber and his knowledge. And I'm just honored that he's actually coming aboard and doing this. I mean, it's amazing to me.
So where can they listen to Michael Badnarek at?
Right now, he's tomorrow at www.truthfindersnetwork.com. And you can, tonight, I mean, I would suggest that you guys go on to YouTube, take a look at some of his videos and see who he is and watch it. I mean, get those questions out. And If you go on to the Truth Finders Network right now, I have a link through to his website where you can download the second chapter of his book, which talks about privileges and rights. That part is open for download. It's free download. And you can get there from the Truth Finders Network. Just click on his little picture. It'll take you to his website. You can download it, read it. Just that chapter in his book alone will open your eyes to things that you may not have ever known. And I can't wait. You know, I'm excited.
You know, I agree. You know, anytime you get a chance to learn more about the Constitution, the founding of our history, the founding of our country, the Declaration of Independence, and your responsibility as citizens of your state, I think it's always a good thing. You know, I've been studying this thing for 25 years now, since, you know, more than 25 years, and I still study it daily. You know, I still study it weekly. So you can never know too much of a good thing. So that'll be tomorrow night at what time?
8 p.m. Eastern.
8 p.m. Eastern at www.truthfindersnetwork.com. You'll also be able to catch our broadcast there, and you have Tread on Me coming up shortly, or you can still keep coming here to this site.
Absolutely. Next month, as soon as we get everything settled, you'll actually be streaming in on our network and be heard. You won't even only be able to hear them here on the Don't Tread on Me, You've Tread on Me show, but you'll actually be able to hear him on Truth Finders Network and also, I believe, ScaryCarry.com. So this show in itself is growing. It's going to have a bigger audience, and there's just great things in the future for all of us. So stay tuned.
So, yeah, we're looking to get back to our 2,000 live listeners per show, and then from there, 100,000 listeners per broadcast. So help me make it happen, people.
Yeah, we need to shoot for 300 million, Randy.
I'm shooting for 300 million, man. I'm looking at 100,000 just in the next 6 months. So that's my goal, 100,000 in the next 6 months. From there, it just escalates. You know, when I reach the 100,000 mark, it'll just escalate. But, you know, in the meantime, I want to thank each and every one of you that have been in here tonight. You know, the only reason I've stayed online for the last 6 years is because of you guys. You know, whether it was just the people in the chat room, you know what I mean? At one point, you know, there was over 250 people in the chat room at any given night. So I want to thank each and every one of you that have stuck around, that are still here, that listen. But more importantly, I want to thank you that actually go out there and implement, that do, that think, that question. And many of you even question me, and that's a good thing. So with that being said, as always, you know, Joe, if you want to get a copy of Joe Martino's book, retired Colonel Joe Martino, the book Resistance to Tyranny, we have regular copies for sale. I've got signed autographed copies for sale with an amazing little statement he's putting in there. I've read it to a few people. You know, I'll actually have him read the statement when he comes back on, but, you know, we've got signed copies available as well. There's only two places you can get his book right now: Amazon, they don't need your money, and they really don't care about this book, and here at youhavetreadonme.com. So as soon as my site gets fully finished up, you can hit the PayPal link. Until then, you can email me, contact me by Skype or whatever. Let me know you want a copy, and I'll tell you how we can go about getting it in your hands. I've already had several copies ordered. I've got several signed copies ordered, so get your orders in, and we'll get it out there. Everybody that's read this book says this book is a must-own, must-read by every militia member. Hell, I say it should be owned by every American out there. So, and I don't give my accolades to anybody that heavily ever. I've never said that about any – well, I've said that about 11 books. Joe Martino's is the 11th. So that being said, everybody, this Tuesday coming up, we got retired Colonel Joseph P. Martino on again. We're going to be talking about goals of the resistance, and as all you all know who have ever listened to him before, this man is highly qualified to speak on insurgencies and resistance, as he was the insurgency expert for the U.S. military for many, many, many years, as well as being a professor of just war doctrine up until this current day. So we'll be having him on Tuesday, and next week we're having the militia roundtable with several Ohio militia leaders, as well as Smiter from the Silent Sons of Washington, and Joseph P. Martino will be on with us for that one as well. So until then, everybody, be safe, be free. I got a song in closing for you guys, just so you remember. It is something that used to be played on Saturday morning cartoons when we used to teach our kids things that were important in between cartoons. This is The Shout Heard Round the World.
Now the ride of Paul Revere set the nation on its ear, and the shot at Lexington heard round the world. When the British fired in the early dawn, the War of Independence had begun. The die was cast, the rebel flag unfurled, and
on to Concord, march the foe, seize the arsenal, there you know, waking folks and searching all around. For our militia stopped them in their tracks, at the old North Bridge we turned them back, chased those redcoats back to Boston town. Out shot heard round the world, well, the start of the revolution, the Minutemen were ready on the move. Take your powder, take your guns, report to General Washington. Hurry, men, there's not an hour to lose. Now famous Bunker Hill, even though we had lost, it was quite a thrill. The rebel colonel, Prescott Poopy, was wise. Outnumbered and low on ammunition, as the bridge storms his position, he said, hold your fire till you see the whites of their eyes. Though the next few years were rough, General Washington's men, it seems they were tough. Those hungry, ragged boys would not be beat. One night they crossed the Delaware, surprised the Hessians in their lair, and a sally force just bundled up their feet. Now the shot heard round the world, well, the start of the revolution, the Minutemen were ready on the move. Take your blankets, take your sons, report to General Washington. We've got our rights and now it's time to prove. Well, they showed such determination that they won the admiration of countries across the sea like France and Spain. Who loaned the colony ships and guns and put the British on the run and the Continental Army on its feet again. Though we lost some battles too, the Americans swore they'd see it through. They kept up raiding parties, hit and run. At Yorktown, the British could not retreat. Bottled up by Washington and the French fleet, Cornwallis surrendered, and finally we had won. And a shot heard around the world, it was the end of the revolution. The Continental rebel took the day. And the father of our country beat the British there at Yorktown. Brought freedom to you and me and the USA. God bless America.
Say,